Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. It's time now for Ghost Raps Radio. Here's Big Ray.
To Ghost Raps, everyone. I am Big Ray, and on the line with us also tonight, we have Steve Galante of Visual Paranormal Investigations. Steve is going to be talking a little bit about it. He's going to do our paranormal pop quiz here after a while, and Tracy Helvey, our cult specialist, he's going to be doing Witches, Friend or Foe segment, and we have a Haunted Road. And that road this week is in New Jersey that you may want to miss. And our special guest tonight is going to be Edwin. I call him Eddie. He's a friend of mine. Edwin Becker and Marsha Becker. Their life was totally interrupted back in the 1970s when they were a young couple with a newborn baby in Chicago. And their story involves the first ever televised exorcism in the history of the world, from what the way history is written. His book is called True Haunting, and it's a true account of his story of what the family went through back in the day during this haunting in an apartment building that he purchased. It was actually what we call it, an upstairs, downstairs unit. And so he's going to be, him and Marsha, they're going to be on talking to us about the true haunting. And he's written several other books, which is really good. And let me get your pen ready. I'm going to give you the call-in number. That is 323-580-5703. That's 323-580-5703. 5703, because Ed has very nicely furnished us a copy of True Hauntings that has been autographed for you. So we're going to announce the caller, and when we do, you call in, you win the book. And of course, free of charge, free to mail. It'll be in the mailbox hopefully by Monday if Uncle Sam does his job here. So, anyway, thanks again, and go ahead and say hello, Steve.
Yeah, hi, everybody. That book has me very interested. I'd like to read it. Can I call in?
No.
I didn't think so.
That's a good try.
You can get it.
Yeah.
I
got my autographed copy.
I think it should go to you.
Yeah, well, thank you. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention tonight's show will feature me. It'll be about me, a cameo appearance by me. And
I think it's starring you, too.
Sorry, hey, Ray. I didn't want to say hello.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your your thoughts and well wishes out there. Tracy, we don't want you talking too much because it's about me, but go ahead, introduce yourself.
Yeah, well, y'all, we have a good show going, if they let me talk. But other than that, hello, everyone, and please call in. I'd like some input on my segment tonight, see what y'all think.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, too, because everybody, and we spoke about this a little bit last week, about how do we ward off evil? Because as we've all been told, Steve, Tracy, myself, and other folks out there that are paranormal investigators, ghost hunters, and that we've been doing the devil's work. So I don't know. I guess if we're doing that, we really don't need to ward it off because we're already there.
A very
That's
good
one
point.
Way of looking at it.
Yeah. I'm quick-witted tonight, huh? I guess I'm going to sit down.
No, I think we should get a check for doing all that work.
All right. I will put that in the mail to you tomorrow.
Yes, but no, you got to get it from the big man downstairs.
Oh, that's even better, actually. That way I don't have to do anything.
Okay. Of course. It's all about you. I wouldn't want you to do anything.
Yeah, I'll talk to him as soon as we get off the air.
Okay, thank you.
We can arrange for you. Double evil. Okay, so let me see. We're still waiting on Ed to check in here. So let me see. This week, I didn't really have a lot going on. Oh, Steve, you did upload a new video recently. Tell the folks about it.
Oh, yeah, the video we did is, I think I mentioned it last week. That's a compilation video.
Okay.
It's from, I think, 5 different investigations we did, one in Gettysburg, one in the Selma Mansion, which is in Norristown, Pennsylvania. I think we included in that, if I'm not mistaken, the Red Mill, which is in Clinton, New Jersey, not related to Clinton Road. The name of the town, I can't think of the other locations, but they're all included in there. It's kind of like a little sampler. They have the Shanley Hotel. That was our very first investigation. That's in there. But basically, that's still up, and you know. So if you want to check that out, that's something to see.
Right. Yeah. Well. Check that out after the show, folks. And you can go to YouTube, of course, and type in Visual Paranormal Team, and then you can bring that up. That way it would be a good way to get that done. And let's see here. There's been a lot going on in the news, but nothing. Every week I have a pet peeve. This week, my pet peeve is the local news. I don't know if everybody in the country, actually, I'm from back up in the mountains, and our morning news up there in the hills is more entertaining, more comprehensive, more thorough than any of the news channels down here in Richmond. And I'm going to tell Steve, he's up in New Jersey, folks. And
I'm up in, New York. New York, sorry.
Yeah, the road we're going to talk about tonight, the Haunted Road segment, is going to be in New Jersey. He's in Staten Island, New York, so not in it, on it, I guess.
Under it.
Under it, okay. So, okay, yeah, hunker down. So, now I didn't forget where I was going.
No, your pet peeve about the news.
Oh, the news. Yeah, thank you. See, that's how much it really keeps my interest. So every morning here in Richmond, the traffic pattern and the weather changes so much that we have to have it told to us every 5 minutes. No joke. I mean, you know, and then they're right about 5% of the time, if they're lucky. Like the other day, you know. You're all going to drown. It's going to be a horrible day. The storms are going to be ridiculous. It was one of the nicest days we've had. And as a matter of fact, it was the nicest day we've had in a long time. It was cool. There was a breeze. I went out, sat under a tree, ate lunch. But, of course, the weather people were nowhere to be seen, except on the evening news saying, well, tomorrow it's going to be worse. And so up there in New York, do y'all get like the... And down here in Richmond, they like to consider this a city. I've actually been to real cities like New York, like Tracy and you guys, San Diego, Hong Kong, even countries I can't say, huge cities like Manila. And the news, they're actually talking about new stuff. Down here they're talking about, well, there's Jeremy in his coat. Thank you for Jeremy for being our Facebook buddy today.
Well, it's because they don't have any news to report.
Oh, there's plenty of news. They're just too ignorant to find it, I think. And they're just
are they
so
on a
late.
More local news level?
Oh, it's local. It's very local. It's, today Aunt Sarah's going to show us how to make her cupcakes. And once again, there's Jeremy and his brother. They had a repeat this week, actually.
A repeat of the news?
No, of the Facebook buddy.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean,
what's the Facebook buddy?
They're getting ready for school. So they're decked out in their school gear and all that, getting ready.
Okay.
Which is still another 3 weeks away. But it's so bad that they actually had a repeat. And he actually said it, a repeat. Oh, here's Jeremy and his brother. They were on last week. We can't even get a fresh Facebook buddy. That's how bad it is. I mean, it's freaking sad. So do they do that up there, like the news every 5 minutes? I'm not kidding you. Every 5 minutes we get the weather and the traffic.
No, it's not really. Up here, you can check the weather on the Weather Channel. That, I mean, that's what it's there for. But the news channels are, you know, they're big affiliates.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Fox News.
It's CBS, NBC, all that, but they just have absolutely, they really don't know how, I don't think they went to journalism, you know, school, like when we went to journalism school, went to college to study journalism. And, there's the road. Yep, that's Jim. He's driving down the road. He's on, it looks like 95 North.
Is that really the news, or is that like a Good Morning show?
That's the
morning. They have those on the radio. It's not really a news show. It's like just a chat show.
Well, you're right. It's really not a news show. It is it's like Facebook on channel 6, 8, and 12.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty sad, actually.
It's all the same on each channel, too.
Exactly. That's my point. Every channel, it's the same guy. You flip the channel, and it's another dude saying the same thing that the chick's saying on the other channel about the weather.
Yeah, and if you watch one half-an-hour show, you've heard all the news of the day, even though they have 3 hours of news.
Yeah, that's a little peculiar.
Yeah.
No, that they don't have here. I mean, it's regular. It's, like I said, it's the big affiliates. You know, they will repeat stories,
yeah.
You know, like, you know, if you're going to sit and watch the news all day, of course, they're going to repeat, you know, the top headlines and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, the morning shows I don't really watch.
Yeah. Well, down here I don't either. I watch, I flip it on to see if they're going to wait 10 minutes to go over the news and the weather again, but it's always 5 minutes, so I really just saw it 5 minutes ago, so I don't need to waste my daggone time on it. So I usually watch Beverly Hillbillies or Green Acres or something entertaining.
Green Acres was a good show. I liked that one.
Yeah, it came on again this morning and kind of torqued me off a little bit because I was getting ready to leave, but I was enjoying it.
Pretty funny.
It is. Oh, so looks like Ed has checked in, so hold the line, guys. And it's thinking. And hello, Ed, this is Big Ray. You still there?
Hi, Big Ray. Good evening.
Hey, good evening. I got Steve and KB. He's on a sabbatical. So we have Steve and Tracy on. I don't know if he was able to hear or not, but Steve heads up Visual Paranormal Investigations out of Staten Island. And Tracy, you may remember him. He was their team occult specialist, and he still is their occult specialist. So they're on the lines with us. Have you got Marcia with you?
Yeah, she should be on.
Hey. I'm here.
You know, I was listening to your comments about news and friend of mine is a newscaster here. He's an anchor, and one night he quoted a couple statistics that were laughable. So I emailed him and I said, "How the hell could you read that with a straight face?" And he said he has to. I mean, journalism is gone. Okay, these people—they're no longer journalists. They just read whatever on the teleprompter. So I don't pay much attention to the news.
Exactly. And that's what I tell the wife, you know, CNN, we call it the Communist News Network in the military, because we'd see stories that they would send back and then watch the evening news, and it's nothing like it. And they actually had, you know, the big, Tracy, you probably remember this, they had a big invasion of Iraq back in the day. I think you might have been around about that time.
Yeah,
and,
I was underneath the ground over there at that time.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? But You know, a lot of those reports that came out of CNN was blue screen from the top of their building in Atlanta.
Wow.
Didn't know that. You were fighting the war in Atlanta, dude.
God.
You were not where you were supposed to be. You were out of position.
Well, I tell you what, I've heard stories about what they reported back here, and I tell you one thing, it was nothing like what they reported. Nothing like it. They made everything up.
Exactly. They absolutely do, and did, and they've been called on it several times. Not just them, but CBS, NBC, some of the others. Sorry if I get it wrong, but yeah, there was one that did a story on a truck. They actually set off charges on it to make it look like it was, you know, messing up. Sorry, Ed. So, how are you doing? How's the leg?
Tomorrow, hopefully, I'll get this cast off. I had this thing on my knee, and they couldn't figure out what the hell it was, actually. They took x-rays and ultrasounds, all that crap. But it was, when they removed it, they said it was the largest calcification they had ever seen. It was below my kneecap. And fortunately, it wasn't rooted in the ligaments or fused itself to the bone. So it came off, I guess we had 2.5 hours of surgery. It came off rather well.
Okay.
So I'm hoping, I'm in a full leg cast, so I can't bend my leg, and that's a bitch. But hopefully I'll get that off tomorrow.
He's cranky. I'll get off.
I was just going to say, Marcia, how's that going for you?
He's cranky.
That's why she gave me those big donuts.
I was like, don't they have pills for that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Shut up. Eat your donut.
Those things are obscene. They're so huge, but they're so good. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that was a huge donut. I figured you just wanted to shut him up or something.
Yes.
I'm not sure, buddy.
Get off for a little while.
She doesn't know, okay, that I've been having nightmares about. You've seen the movie Misery?
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
I keep picturing her doing a Kathy Bates coming in at night with a 2x4 and whacking my other knee, you know.
No, that whole movie, that whole scene that I actually keep remembering. And if I see her face or see his face, that's all I remember is him getting his ankles broke.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, I'm vulnerable right now, so I got to be nice.
Yeah.
Well, does that mean when they get the kids up, you're not going to be nice? Come on.
If she ever says
she wants to go to her happy place, I'd be starting to worry.
No, he's been pretty good. He hasn't been that bad at all.
That's good. Yeah, it's a good guy. But I figured you're probably looking for a cast cutter to take it off yourself.
Yeah. Well, I feel sorry for him. I really do. It's
No, they don't do that anymore on certain types of injuries or surgeries. What I'm wearing is it's medieval. It's got a 1-inch steel bar. It's at least 1 inch, maybe 2 inches, going up the back of my leg.
Uh-huh.
And each side has a 1/2 inch to 1 inch steel bar. And then they strap it on and tighten it down. And, it's medieval. It's contraption.
That's right. It keeps your knee from bending.
The Iron Lady.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. Hopefully he'll get off tomorrow, I think. But keeping him from running all over the place is going to be difficult.
Gotta be real careful in that. Don't push it hard. I told a friend of mine at work, he's a pharmacist, and he got his cast off. He fractured his fibula, which is the back bone in your calf, and it's hard to fracture because it's free floating. And I told him, I said, dude, take a break. I know you want to get out there and run and all that crap, but just chill. And he did for about 2 weeks, and then he went running and refractured it. And I told him, I said, see there?
No.
You got to, you know, take your time, let it heal. They'll probably have you in some physical therapy, that kind of thing. You know, do what you can do. Use a walker or a cane so you don't fall and hurt yourself.
Yeah, I got it all. I got a transport chair, a walker, and a cane.
Yeah.
And no, I'll take it easy. I'm enjoying breakfast in bed, I'll tell you that. So I'm going to be using that cane as much as I can. just for effect.
Oh, goodness. I'm in for it.
Yeah. Yeah, one time he might try to trip you.
I also got my heart, you know, my pacemaker. So every time she gets mean, I can hold my chest and say, "I'm coming, Mama." You know.
Stop that.
Yeah, man, you've been through the mill here lately.
Yeah. I kidded my grandchildren. They were so concerned over Papa having surgery. But I kidded them. They came to see me, and I told them, I said, the doctor really did a great job on my leg. I said, he gave me a whole new muscle and everything else. And I said, now I'm going to be able to slam dunk like Michael Jordan.
Oh.
And they're all waiting for me now to get the cast off.
He is trouble. He's trouble.
How's your vision?
It's better. You know, I'm anxious to see this one doctor that did that to me, because it put me in a bad way. They basically said, we're going to double your medications, and they doubled one, and I tolerated it okay, and they doubled the second one. And they don't bother to tell you what the side effects are going to be. And about 2 weeks later, all of a sudden, I literally couldn't see. Everything was colored out and blurred out. I thought I injured my eyes. So I wound up at an eye specialist who told me physically I was fine. So Marcia, astutely, she backed off the medication. And within a couple weeks, my vision, now my vision is pretty good. I still have one little distorted spot. But I want to go see this doctor who did this to me. I'm going to tell her that I actually got four cardiologists. So I see each one of them a different. One's in charge of electrical signals. One's in charge of the pacemaker. One's in charge of my chemistry, and I'm going to tell her that, you know, she ruined my damn life for a month. You know, it should be, Marcia just went through it. They prescribe these medications. They don't tell you what the side effects are.
Yeah,
and then it's like, oops, we're sorry. I mean, literally, my cardiologist said to me, I'm sorry. You know, you ruined my damn life for a month, and I'm sorry.
They don't know.
But you could tell I'm better because I got an attitude.
Yeah, you're back to your old self.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, some things never change.
Well, I'm glad to see the kids are doing good. Keep an eye on you on Facebook and all that. And I haven't been sending you messages because I knew your eyes were kind of bad, so I apologize for not staying in touch, but I figured you had enough on your plate without me bugging you.
Yeah. Never bug us.
No, anytime, Ray, anytime.
I appreciate it. You guys are good friends and no joke. And I do worry about you, and I'm glad you're doing better.
We're doing super. We like our new house, and we're closer to our kids. I'm closer to a trauma center, so that I'm safer. And we're doing fine.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, this area really well. I thought I'd be a little nervous because so many people. And it's very crowded.
Yeah, you were talking about cities. Springfield's, I don't know, it's kind of a city. It's about 250,000 people.
Yeah.
You know, growing up in Chicago, this is like a little town, but...
Yeah.
Coming from Branson, it's the big city.
Right,
Branson had population 6,000, so we're getting used to the noise and the sirens and the whatnot.
Well, I'm glad you are closer because I was kind of worried about you out there.
What's your Richmond population?
Around 60,000.
Wow.
It's not that much. And you get the counties and all that together, you're looking around 200 and some thousand if you put all the counties together. Henrico.
Yeah, we're kind of similar.
Yeah. Richmond's kind of a, for its area, it's really small for a town. I mean, I'm in North Hanover, or in Hanover and County, which is north of Richmond, and, at the hospital over at the, on the south side there at the VA, and I can get there in 25, 30 minutes, and even if traffic is horrible coming home, I can be here in 40, 45 minutes. so it's not that big. And traffic, you know, they right here, oh, the traffic's horrible. No, trust me, you don't know what traffic is.
45 minutes, I'll get you dead with a heart attack.
Yeah.
It will. You got about, doctor told me if this pacemaker goes berserk, I got 15 minutes max.
Right.
So my hospital is, we're at an expressway exit in a little community called Chesterfield Village, and two exits down is the best trauma center in town.
Good.
I'm maybe 5 minutes away. You know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's perfect. And
no, sir.
Yeah, out here where we're at, I got a rescue squad that's 5 minutes up the road of that if you stop for the two stoplights. And but we're out here in the county, but MCV, I can be from here to MCV, which is our big trauma center, in 8 minutes. So it's not that bad here, and there's so many secondary kind of roads that you can get to wherever you want to be, even if there isn't huge traffic jam, it's going to make you a whole 10 minutes late. You can go around it and still be on time, so it's not that bad.
No.
But, well, I guess folks are tired of hearing me rattle. So
I got a good story for you.
Okay.
If you want to hear it.
Yeah, man.
When we were in Branson, we had a ghost. It was not a malevolent ghost. It was something that Marcia and I, we both saw and we kind of knew. He was big, and he was about my size, over 6 foot. And every now and then we'd see him in a shadowy form. So I'd be in the bedroom and Marcia would yell at me in the front room, and I'd say, I'm in the bedroom, and she'd say, you just passed my door, you know. But he'd interrupt our remotes sometimes, which they can do, but he never caused anything. It's like just letting us know he was there. And my assumption was that he belonged to the land, because there was a fellow who actually bought our property, never got a chance to build the house there, and he passed away. That's who I assumed it was. And our kids and our family and even our granddaughters were aware of it, and they'd say, Papa, you know, I think you got a ghost. I deny it. No, we don't. No, we don't, you know. Well, we left Branson and we came to Springfield, and never said anything about it. We moved here, and probably we've only been here 3 weeks, and Marcia saw him. And she said to me, he's here. And I said, where'd you see him? Well, we have a dining room, and she decided to give up her dining room set. So she gave it to me as my music room. And on one wall, I've got all my guitars, including some vintage guitars.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that he's attached to my vintage guitar. He wasn't attached to the Branson house at all. So I've got this 1959 Hofner bass. I believe that's what it is, he's attached to that item. Now, attachments are kind of rare. I mean, Marcia and I were in the collectible business. You there?
Yeah.
We probably handled tens of thousands of items, and I only know of two other attachments. So unlike the haunted collector, you can't do a series on, you know, I don't want to piss anybody off, but the odds of having an item every week that can solve a ghostly problem are kind of odd.
Yeah,
this is our third experience in our whole lives. We've got an attachment. He's not troublesome.
No, not at all.
We don't address him. We won't speak of him, but he followed us from Branson to here.
Called your guitar.
He probably either maybe made it or owned it, or who knows, maybe just liked it and attached to it. That's actually kind of weird, because that's a topic.
That's my wife's phone. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Tell them we said hey. That's actually a topic that Steve's going to talk about tonight and on his paranormal pop quiz. So a little bit of background on Ed and Marcia. They were, like I say, in the book True Haunting, and you can go to the website, click on the link there, go to Amazon, you can go to, we'll let Ed give his website, so you can go there and buy his book, because it is a good read. I have read it, a couple times, actually. It's a couple of his other books, and they are good. Ed does really write well, and Steve would like it because he's a former teacher, and so he would actually like it, and I'm going to get him a copy of it. But
yeah, the only people that don't like it are authors. Because I don't write in flowery prose. I write what I call Chicago English. And I assume my readers are intelligent and have good imaginations.
That's right.
And I enjoy writing that way. So a lot of the writers look at me and they say, well, you didn't use 15 adjectives to describe a blade of grass. No, I don't need to. I think my readers know what a blade of grass looks like, you know. I write pretty straightforward. But this week I broke the record in Kindle. I've got the most reviews any book has ever had in the Paranormal 100.
There you go.
And I've got the most five-star reviews anybody. I broke 200 in five-star reviews in Paranormal. So
that's great.
The readers like it. The readers like it, you know.
Wow, that's the main thing. It's entertaining. I'm an avid reader all my life until I had problems with my eyes. And I would read 7, 8, 9 books a week. And I will take a storyteller anytime over a lot of flowery prose. And, you know, you feel like you can get to the point.
Our situation related to so many people, so many people relate to it. I mean, I bought a haunted house at a time when, I mean, I laugh when people say, well, it's 2001 and we couldn't find help for a haunted house. Imagine what 1970 was like.
Yeah.
Everybody called us nuts. But we had a dynamic in that Marcia was sensitive, and she kind of realized it right away. And honestly, I was an a-hole. I just went into denial. I just didn't believe in such things. So she had to tolerate me for a number of months until I became aware I couldn't rationalize any longer, and I kind of threw my hands up in the air and said, you know, what the hell are we going to do?
Yeah, he drove me crazy. He really did. If you can imagine someone that next to you, the closest person in the world is next to you and doesn't believe you.
Yeah.
And that is the most frustrating thing in the world, because
with my wife, I went through the same thing in a way, being a paranormal investigator and a cult specialist. She don't believe in that stuff, and really it's difficult having a life like this, and the one that you love the most and the closest doesn't really take you
right
for a grain of salt.
That's right. You're right, and it's just it's very frustrating. It's like, what do I do?
Well, after a while, you know, if I'm going to be honest, I can now. I wouldn't have been some years ago. But it was my way of protecting myself, because I had to go to work and leave her there.
Yep, you did.
So, you know, how could I just justify and say, yeah, this place is haunted, and you're going to stay here all day, and I'm going to work. See ya. So it was kind of my way of in retrospect, you know, I didn't want to believe.
No.
Well, if you don't believe, then it doesn't make it so, then, you know, she should be okay. And,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Because I remember being in the military, and I ran a pediatric clinic, taught kids, you know, well, you treat the parents, you take care of the kid. But,
right.
You know, there was like females, young girls, 18, 19 years old, 3,000 miles from home, 1,000 miles from home, with another dude, you know, that they just married. They're both young. He's a Marine. He's gone. And then the wife's left there with this new baby and no support system.
Exactly.
And, you know, I felt so sorry for him.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I see I see both of your sides of it, and even I lived it myself, because same thing, wife, young kid, I'm gone, and there she is, you know, 3,000 miles from home, and no support system, and doesn't know crap about a baby, other than they eat crap. And
Sorry. And to try to be protective, protect your instincts, of course. As a new mom, it's all I could think of, how to protect her.
Right.
And what I was feeling, and what I was seeing, and what was happening. And that was the worst. To me, that was the worst.
I was pretty ignorant because even when I did eventually get finished rationalizing, and I couldn't rationalize any longer, I still had no fear. I felt like they were airbags. Growing up in the city, people scared the hell out of me. They could scare me, but not ghosts. It was like there was nothing there, no references. Nobody would acknowledge it. Everybody said we're crazy. I mean, other than Hans Holzer, who might be on Johnny Carson every now and then.
Right.
There was not a whole lot written. So it was, I didn't know how to act. Literally, I mean, I just didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Well, did you fear, like, physical harm?
That's Tracy.
Eventually, I did. Eventually, I didn't feel physical harm for myself. I felt it for my family. Because toward the end, it started messing with the gas, turning the gas on and off.
Right.
And that frightened me. And myself, I've never been afraid of ghosts. I'm not afraid of them today. Demons, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Say the word demon, I'm gone. Because I hung with the exorcist that helped us, and I know a little bit about demons. And then studied more. So, you know, I don't... That's a dirty word almost.
Right. You do not want to go there. You don't want to mess with them.
Well, I'm the occult specialist for the team. So I've dealt with a lot of very negative demonic energies and entities. And,
right.
No, it's not to fool around with.
No, it isn't. And it makes the whole thing so much deeper and more frustrating because now not only are things going bump in the night, but evil is here. And I can't even convince them of the things that go bump in the night yet. So, that was, what do I do now?
Yeah,
a lot of people don't know how to handle it because they've never experienced it. And, you just have to be really careful because, it can take you away from this world really fast.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's when I meet these people. I'm an old guy, so I've seen a lot of this stuff, and a lot of people think the paranormal was invented in the year 2000 with cable TV. It really wasn't, and I see all these people calling themselves demonologists, and I ask them one question. In fact, I asked one famous guy one question on the radio. We were both sharing at a station, and I said, how do you tell a malevolent spirit from a demon? And he hemmed and he hawed and he changed the subject. And there's one word. Power. You know, a demon will throw your ass across the room and then throw the refrigerator on top of you.
Exactly.
I saw something on, it was either Facebook or someone like that, social networking, that someone was claiming to be a demonologist. I said, you can call me what you want, I don't care. This is what I specialize in, but I'm not a demonologist because technically a demonologist has to be a member of the clergy.
Right.
And so I wrote back, I said, you're a demonologist? Well, what member of what clergy are you? Give me some background. And he never commented. So I think I shot him down. But people think just because they have the title that that's what they are, and it's so not true.
Well, they're all self-appointed.
Right.
And a lot of the stuff I read, I read it and I shake my head. It's like people do that and they're going to get hurt. They write dangerous stuff. You go into a room and you light some sage and you sing Kumbaya and everything will be all right.
I was a witch for quite a few years and I practiced Wiccan. So I did a lot of Wiccan house cleansings and stuff like that. And literally, it would take me a week to get ready to go on an investigation that I would be comfortable going on, knowing that I'm not going to get attacked or the team's not going to get attacked. And there's a process to go through. And people think that they can just go in there and say, here we go.
Exactly.
And they're going to walk out. And it scares me for the teams out there because they really don't know what they're faced up against.
It does. It's right. One of our very best friends, Jill's in the chat room now. She has a team, and this girl works tirelessly. She has a full-time job and then devotes, and children and a husband, and she devotes a gigantic amount of her time to helping people. And I don't think people quite understand that. They're putting themselves in danger to try to get you out of danger.
Yeah.
And my biggest fear is, I tell her all the time, please don't bring anything home with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, how do you feel about that? Are you ever worried that something's going to follow you home?
Yes. All the time.
All right.
And I don't think I've ever had it, but like last week's show, I gave a example of what's happened to me on an investigation where I don't remember even going to the investigation or anything. And people who listened to the show last week will probably know this. I'm sorry to repeat. But, yeah, from the time I left the house to the time I got, I could swear I never went on that investigation. Don't remember the house. Don't remember the people. Got sat on the couch, did my thing. Ray thought I was normal. But the guy that we went to said when he looked at my face when I came in the door, he said, that's a guy I do not want to mess with. So I had something in my face that, and I guess it was something that knew I could fight it off and knew
right.
that I had the power to get rid of it, and it wanted to silence me before I ever got in the house.
Right.
Ain't that something?
Yeah. It's very frightening, and the people that you're helping and the people that want help, they need to understand that. They need to understand you literally.
I always say I admire the people who are out there trying to expand the science and those that are healers and helping people. And even if they're just validation, because, I mean, that's all Marcia and I needed in the 1970 was someone to tell us you're not crazy.
Right.
But the people who are just out there ghost hunting, I feel like they're playing with fire. I don't think they can be protected. I think that, you know, when you're going out there and you're intentionally looking for confrontation, they have no idea what they might confront.
No, and
right.
these are people that selfishly, that's not what I meant to say, without being selfish, go out there time after time after time and put themselves into danger to help people. And I find it just amazing. That's...
You're braver than I am because I wouldn't do it. I mean, been there, did that. The odds of me going out and to a haunted place are zero. You know, I don't even like going to a paracon. So I'm more or less a recluse when it comes to that subject.
I don't do it often now anyway. That was the time of my life where I really think my life was pretty screwed up too. I mean, and I don't say I had a demonic presence attached to me, but I obviously had something going on because it's a very dark side of my life. Of course, I go to church now. I go to Presbyterian church. I'm not wicked anymore and don't practice witchcraft. But, and a lot of people tell me I should write a book because, you know, I'm 47 years old. I've been to 27 different countries, fought in a war, been a paranormal investigator for about 10 years or so. And how many stories that I could, I could fill up novels and novels. I have a next-door neighbor that thinks that I need to sit down and write a book and it would be a top seller. But, you know, I just can't see. I don't see that anybody would be really interested in my life. That's why I don't do it.
Yeah.
You can't predict it because when I put True Haunting out, I did not think it would sell one copy. I swear to God.
Wow.
Because it's too tame. For today. I mean, today people expect blood to shoot out the walls and
flying pigs
down the hall. And basically, our story is it's our story of what happened truthfully. I can pass a lie detector on it.
Yes.
I didn't embellish it. And when I found out, I'm not a follower of the paranormal, though I've been a paraholic in the closet, all the time. But I never watch the TV shows. So there's not much in my book that they haven't captured on TV already. But it's shot off like a rocket.
Yeah.
And
right.
It's going on its third year now. It started its third year last month. And popular in England and Germany and Australia.
That's amazing.
You'd be surprised when you write something what will capture a person's attention.
Well, like your wife said, I think she'd prefer a storyteller than a professional writer. No, yes. That's true. Everyone wants the down-to-earth stories that will hold their attention, and that I think that's a big key of it, too.
Exactly. And trust me, there is much more to this story. And so we haven't even gotten into my part.
Well, Ray knows that, because I wanted Ray to provoke you a little bit, because when I wrote it as my diary almost, and then I did some preparation for my daughter. It was supposed to be published under Catherine Higdon's name, my daughter's. Instead, she didn't listen to Papa. She published it in my name because I didn't want to stick my head out in the paranormal, and I never interviewed my wife. So.
Yeah, there are things he doesn't know.
I wasn't going to put in this book that I acted like a jackass for 6 months. You know, I admit that, yeah, I was a non-believer, and I acted terribly. I mean, emotionally, I must have driven her crazy.
A little bit. Definitely a little bit. Because it's more frustrating than anything. Because you're trying to, when you hear the footsteps, when you hear the arguing, you tense up and you say, that's it, that's what I've been trying to tell you. Oh, that's just an old house, it's settling, and, you know, he would come up with a zillion excuses.
Yeah, it's the neighbors next door, it's, I had all kinds
of... Well, then he's good at debunking.
I'm sorry?
I said, then you're good at debunking, finding the real cause of things.
Oh, that's true.
I used to be, you know, before I became a believer, I'm a logical person, I was a professional musician, but then I made my bones in computers, so I dealt in logic. And I have a logical mind, and that crap didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, it just did not make sense. You know,
well,
until
I couldn't avoid it anymore.
And I didn't find it frightening, so a door opens.
Right.
A door opens. Big freaking deal. You know, leave it open. The cabinet door opens, so what? It didn't frighten me, and I didn't see the... I didn't realize that what's invisible, you can't judge, you can't predict, you can't evaluate as far as energy.
Right.
You don't know if it's a teddy bear or it's a gorilla.
We had some gorillas.
And I started to provoke it. But I would call it names and criticize it, you know, its energy. Did you ever see Paranormal Witness episode? The Tenants? They showed a scene. I tied a string to a door.
I don't watch a whole lot of them. I don't have a lot of time, but I mean, I don't watch because I don't believe a lot of them are true to fact.
Exactly.
They extend the truth a little bit because a lot of our interviews, they played different scenes behind it that sort of matched our interview, but they weren't what we were talking about.
Okay, yeah.
They did do that, but I had a string that I would tie this one door closed because it kept opening the door. And I would make fun of it, and the door would vibrate, and I would make fun of it. And it wasn't until we finally found help, an exorcist and a psychic, that they basically taught me how to behave. And,
wow.
Yeah. You know, and I needed that advice.
Right.
Sorry. I was going to say, when you torque them off on the other side, and that's what used to really blister my butt about that, and a flame about 3 feet tall, was we'd be on an investigation, they'd be saying, we're not here to hurt you. I was like, don't say that crap. They know we can't hurt them. That is so
nasty.
I said, if anything, they can cause pain to us. So, you know, don't ask those questions. Don't talk along that line. It's just so ignorant. But when you were at home by yourself, Marcia, and with the baby, and you finally had the company downstairs, did y'all, I know there was an incident where I believe the walker almost went down the stairs.
Yes, and I'd like to clear that up.
Yeah.
Didn't happen exactly the way they showed it. The very second I saw that walker move, I dove for it. This baby was very tiny and petite, and she was just adorable, and her feet didn't even reach the floor. So what was happening couldn't logically happen. There's no way she could have moved it. And so I literally grabbed that in midair as the wheels came off the last step and pulled her back. No, I didn't sit there and watch it happen. I did. This yeah. was like seconds. I just ran for it. And as soon as Ed got home, I gave him an earful. Go put that door on there. So the doors were in the garage, in the basement, which I would not enter at all.
Yeah.
So not for any reason would I go in there.
So Ed used to chastise you about staying on the phone a lot too, right?
Yeah. And the funny thing is I didn't know anybody in Chicago. So who would I call? That's what I kept saying to him. I don't have anybody to talk to. And I would not make long-distance calls. Back then, they were just horribly expensive.
Yeah.
And, no, you didn't do that. Like, every other Sunday or something, I'd call home because they had discounts on Sundays. And
yeah, there were. This was before area code, so you had to have
right.
operator assistance. And
right.
It was. Well, that's what teed me off because I thought she's talking to somebody. And the phone's always busy.
Yeah.
And not until I got the bill did I scratch my head and say, what the hell's happening? Because there were, you know, she was truthful. I mean, there was no units used.
No. No.
And
that's what I was being facetious about, folks, was Ed would be at work trying to call home to check on Marsh and the baby, see
right.
how things going, and then can't get through because Marsh is always on the phone, but Marsh is not on
yeah.
the phone. Mr. Joe taking the phone off the hook, and
yep.
he was causing strife between her and Ed.
Which is what they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand that because in 1970, you couldn't own a phone, so you had to lease it from the phone company. And it was very expensive to get your house wired. So
oh, yeah.
strategically, I've had the phone installed in the middle of the house so we could you could get to it equally from the kitchen or from the front room. And you didn't get it moved. It cost, I was making $82 a week clear.
Yeah.
And it cost more than that to get a new jack installed. So a lot of people say, why didn't you have an extension? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? I had one kid write me and say, you know, why didn't you get pictures on your iPod, you know, like if iPods existed. But, yeah, we had the phone in the middle of the house, and the phone would come off the hook, and neither of us could see it. At times, and of course, rationally, after I found out Marcia wasn't on the phone, I said, "Oh, it must be the dog, must be the cat," you know.
Poor,
yeah.
poor talking cat. Take a blame.
I blamed anything I could. Until yeah, until it still started happening when I was home, and then it was like, "Uh-oh," you know, what the hell is it? And I didn't understand it because the phone had nothing to do with these people. You know what I mean? It
yeah.
was a new phone. It wasn't like there's an attachment to it or...
No, they were playing games.
It was just
yeah.
just creating tension between Marsha and I.
Sure.
Yeah.
And
sorry?
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, a lot of times that's what it likes. It likes strife. It likes causing mayhem and chaos.
Oh, yeah.
It feeds on that negative kind of energy.
Well, it did
you know,
to us.
What'd you say?
It did. It got us good.
Oh, yeah.
So,
when y'all, did, Marcia, did you ever get with the gal downstairs, your renters, and compare notes or anything along that line?
Not really. She would come up every morning and have coffee with me. The babies would play together in the playroom, which was right off the kitchen. I had my eye on her every second. And so we would talk about anything but just to try to talk ourselves into not being afraid.
Okay.
And life is normal. We talked about babies and clothes and recipes and anything. We avoided that subject as much as possible. Now and again, she would come up with something, and I would just be, oh, my God. And what am I going to do to help her?
Yeah, Ray, we never knew. I mean, it wasn't until Paranormal Witness and we met Dan. I wrote the book, and then Dan found out he was in the book, and then he contacted me, and I invited him to be on Paranormal Witness with us. And when we had our reunion, and him and I talked the first night, I couldn't believe it, what they went through. And with Marcia and I having no knowledge, we never knew his wife left him. He told us she went on vacation.
Yeah.
We did know that he was superstitious because he carries Indian superstitions with him, and when the exorcism didn't work, he wanted out. And I told him he can go. You know, I'm not going to hold him to the lease.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until 41 years later did I hear, I mean, on his floor, there was touching and biting and all kinds of things that are not in my book.
Right. And, you know, I was just devastated when I left, but I had to not do that because I wanted them safe. And we become great friends, and I was glad they were out, and they were safe, and they were out of there. But things got just so much worse after that, and I think they played on me because I was much more vulnerable.
Right.
With our friends not there anymore.
Yeah. Well, you're the only toy they had left. You and the baby were the only toys left to play with, you know?
Yeah.
That's,
until my sister came to start conjuring things.
Oh, yeah. Well,
she paid the price for that.
She really did. But she thought it was exciting. Look what I can do. And I'm like, don't. I kept telling her every day, don't. Please, you're making this. I'm trying to make this place safe for everybody, and you're undoing everything I'm doing.
Right.
And it caused problems between us as family. So that was sad.
Yeah, it. I feel so strongly about it. I was on another show and we had a caller. He called in and said his sister's playing with a Ouija board. And I had flashbacks. And I mean, I dropped the F-bomb. I said, he asked, what should I do? And I told him what to do. Let up.
Oops.
You there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They actually thought y'all were duking it out upstairs at times, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Danny thought we were arguing at all times, and thought they were arguing, and then it wasn't really until there was one night where Marcia and I were out. And this occurred two different times. Once when my brother was staying overnight with my mother later on. But Danny, we came home and Danny's face was white. And he said, you know, he's hearing crashing and thrashing upstairs and furniture moving. And he thought I was this giant crazy guy anyway.
Yeah.
Because I was always talking to Ben and talking to myself. So he thought we were having a knockdown, drag out fight. And, then he realized we weren't even home.
Right.
And, he said, somebody's upstairs. And I went upstairs, and, you know, nobody was upstairs. And, it scared him to death. He just wanted the heck out of there.
I don't blame him.
Ed saw, and that's what I tell people all the time, I've seen more full-bodied apparitions during the day than I ever have at night.
Oh, yes.
And Ed saw the gal, the older lady out on the stoop, right, Ed?
Right.
Yes.
During the day.
Yeah.
Several times.
Yeah. And in fact, it was about 6:30 in the morning, because I had to be at work at 7. And we saw her right at the base of our stairs, our interior stairs.
You're cutting it out.
And I had so many times I told Marcia, did you see the old woman on the stairs? And she'd go out there and look, and she'd say no. And I thought she thought that I was losing it. And until that morning. And as soon as I saw her, I looked at the base of the stairs. There was this old woman. I turned to Marcia. I said, do you see her? And Marcia said, yes, I do.
Yeah.
And she just
now
walked
that's
away.
That's not the old lady that, sorry to break in real quick, but I'm getting older. She was not the old lady that y'all bought the place from?
No.
We actually bought it from a family. It was a whole family deal. And the old lady we inherited, Myra, was the daughter of that family. And Myra was completely crazy. I mean, she...
Probably driven that way by what was ever there.
I feel that now, you know, 41 years later now, all of a sudden I realize that, yeah, Myra was crazy. It drove Dan's wife, tormented her, drove my sister crazy. And I never did write a, the last tenant, Mrs. Scott, because she went a little bit off the deep end, too.
She really did, yeah.
So it was every woman on the first floor, which had I known that, I never would have rented to my sister.
Well, we wouldn't have ran to anybody if we'd known that.
But, you know, honestly, they bullied themselves in. My brother-in-law worked only two blocks away, so he wanted it for that reason.
Right.
So they were two men. Logical.
And that's what I found on investigations. You know, I try to mix it up and that kind of thing because sometimes things like males more, sometimes they like males less. Sometimes they like females more. Sometimes they like females less. And
exactly.
And that's why I brought females on the team. Initially, we were all a male team. But I found out that when I was sitting there thinking one day, excuse me, I was like, well, what if they like females? So got some females on the team. And we had great success in certain places, whether they didn't like the female or did like the female. You know, sometimes we never knew, but we would get evidence that way. And I find that females tend to experience more, for the most part, than males do in a negative kind of environment.
Yeah.
In my
own
family.
I do, too.
In my own family.
I believe they're much more sensitive.
Yeah. And it sucks because the guy thing, and I texted something about that the other day, was, you know, we are there, we're guys, we protect, and, you know, all that crap.
Right.
And then you can't protect anymore, and it's like, okay, where the hell do I go from here?
Exactly.
And eventually you just got to give up whatever it is. You know, I told the wife, I don't care, you know, the house, give it away, somebody can have it, I don't care, but, you know, you got to walk away from the investment sometime, you know, if your credit's going to suffer.
Yeah.
Who cares if your credit's going to suffer? I don't give a crap because I'd rather have my family's health, sanity, that kind of thing.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, that's what happened with us, basically. I gave that real estate man $400, and I had an escrow. Everything in the building, air conditioners, and for $10 on a quick claim deed. And $10 was, I had assigned the fact that that was legal tender, which is what was required.
Yeah.
But he never gave me the $10. And
well,
I didn't care.
Yeah.
We could have cared less.
Yeah, I didn't care.
So, you know, that's what, you know, I say a lot of times is like, it's not necessarily the building. A lot of times it's the ground. And we found new houses that are haunted, older ones, and land that where there has never been nothing that we know
exactly.
of.
Exactly. Well, they see it as it was.
Right.
You know, so to them, it's how it was, yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of times in stories through history is there's one, I think, down in Savannah, Georgia, a well-known building that they see a woman walking across the second floor, only they see her from her knees up. Well, so they got the study in and come to find out they had actually raised the floor about 2 feet.
Oh, okay.
So where they were seeing a woman walking along on it, like on her knees, from the knees up, really, she was walking on the floor, like you said, from when she knew it existed.
Well, they checked our house out so thoroughly to look for vibrations. Was there a train track near? Was there a highway where big semis could? It's a very old house, and to begin with. And they checked out everything. The funny thing is not really funny, but like the doors, my cabinet doors that would come open, the house actually leans the opposite direction.
Yeah, they were defying gravity.
Right.
And
really?
Before, the fellow I dedicated the book to, who was he was kind enough to help us and stay with us for a long time until he knew we were safe and well, and then we remained friends, Joseph DeLuise. But he was nationally known at the time.
Right.
So they sent in author Tom Valentine, who I'd love to talk to. I know he's out there, and I know he's still writing. But he was an investigator and investigated the hell out of Marcia and I.
Sure.
And the building to make sure that there was nothing that would taint Joe DeLuise's image as a psychic.
Right.
So, yeah, they checked us out. They checked everything out. They asked us more questions than we wanted to answer.
Well, you know, Joseph was such a very kind man, and he never charged us a dime. And he worked tirelessly on this problem, day after day after day after day. And it was just amazing to me that somebody would donate that much time.
And yeah, if you watch that YouTube video, you can see the defeat in his face. I mean, they were defeated. They knew that they didn't do the job.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was like the night before the exorcism, they asked if they could go in and get the bat out. That's the way they put it. And because they had problems before when they had done filmings or brought people in with trouble, people getting hurt. So they wanted to get rid of, he didn't use the word demon, but he skirted around it. And he came downstairs and waved at us. We were sitting in our car. Everybody had to be out of the house, children, pets, us. And so when we walked back into the house, it was creepy. I mean, you couldn't breathe. The air was so thick. And it was just had a very creepy feeling about it. And sure enough, next morning, just wailing, just pitiful wail coming from everywhere. We would argue. It's the living room, the kitchen, the dining room. We'd be arguing.
It was actually the only thing that ever gave me goosebumps and scared me. It scared me. I have never in my life heard a wailing and cry of anguish like we heard that morning. It was 5 o'clock in the morning, and it was coming from everywhere. And
that was the day of the exorcism. So we were already freaked out. And it didn't help that I watched everybody. They were setting up. They were being busy. But I also watched the sound man who was very close to me sitting on the floor. And I knew exactly what he was hearing. I recognized that look. And his eyes would get very wide, and he looked at me like, what is that? And he heard a lot of sounds.
Yeah, when the birds started,
it
was like phenomenal. I mean, it started with a couple little chirps, then the next thing we knew, we were hearing 1,000 birds. And he was trying to filter them out. In those years, they didn't have the stuff they have today, equalizers and things like that. So you can actually hear it on the YouTube video, even though they filtered it as much as they could. And why 1,000 birds gathered in front of our house, I have no idea. You know, unlike the movies, no, they didn't run into the house and kill themselves. And
no.
Unlike The Conjuring, birds don't fly at night.
This was all during the day.
This was all during the daytime. And,
right.
They just gathered in this huge elm tree that was in front of our house, thousands of them, and all were screaming.
Yeah. Well, there's an old wives' tale that birds take the souls of people who are stuck. And
well, what kind of birds were they?
I have no idea.
They
were average-sized birds.
Yeah,
they weren't ravens or big, you know, they were just...
They wasn't like the crows or anything like that.
No.
No, they were regular
just brown
blackbirds or whatever the heck is, I believe. I mean, what happened is we had all the windows and doors closed and the blinds drawn, so we don't really know. I mean, all I knew is I took a peek and it was like, holy shit.
A gazillion birds.
I saw the sound man wincing and trying to play with his dials, and it was like, I never saw so many birds in my life.
Wow.
And the equipment kept breaking. The batteries kept dying. These gigantic
batteries. Yeah, they take the energy of the batteries often. Yeah. We run into that as investigators all the time.
Oh, yeah. And luckily they run out to their car, get another battery, bring it. They did this several times. And just to get through it, and the equipment kept failing. And it probably took 3 or 4 times as long as it should have, just because they had to keep replacing equipment that wouldn't work.
I mean, the funniest thing, and, you know, I wish Paranormal Witness would have put it on, but Paranormal Witness is owned by NBC, so they didn't want to make fun of themselves.
Right.
But everybody called us crazy. And when Carol Simpson, who was a premier reporter, contacted us, initially I didn't want to be in the footage. Marcia and I didn't want our faces shown. But they said, no, the owner has to be interviewed. So we had to be interviewed, and we did it for Joseph.
Right.
But on the day of filming, they brought, you know, two huge trucks, lights, monstrous cameras, everything. And this carload of executives showed up, and they were all making fun and laughing, and they thought this was going to be like a carnival or something. And I was getting pissed. I mean, I was just in the corner. You know, this is something that's wrecking our life, and these guys are laughing. I was about to basically tell them to get their asses out myself. Instead, the exorcist comes in. He wants all the doors and windows closed. And then he says to everybody, address us all, he says, once this begins, no one will be allowed to leave this building. And all these NBC execs, their faces went white, and they ran the hell out. And, you know, what they thought was so funny, all of a sudden they didn't think was so funny. But I wish Paranormal Witness would show that scene.
Yeah, they left a lot out, but they know what they're doing. That they have to put good TV on. So we understood that. But they really didn't embellish anything. They really just, the timeline was switched around for the purpose of time. And they really, in fact, they left out some of the scariest parts, and I really couldn't figure that out.
Well, you know, trying to cram 21 months, 18 days, and 12 hours in 63 minutes is impossible.
Yeah.
And they do have plans for a future project if the rights are available. So right now the rights are wide open for anybody, the movie rights.
Huh. Well, Steve's their video guy with Visual Paranormal Investigation. He was looking for a project.
That sounds like it's right up our alley. I mean, if there was that kind of activity to get that on camera.
Yeah,
that would be
awesome.
You know what? That's proof positive.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
I mean, that's in Visual Paranormal, our team, we don't do private residences.
Right.
Because we really don't feel qualified to be able to clear them.
Right.
If a person's having a problem, I tell them to go to a priest or go to a rabbi or go to, you know, some form of clergy. We strictly document. We'll go into these places. They're larger places like Eastern State Penitentiary. We're going up. We're doing Pennhurst Asylum, and we're going up to Hillview Manor, and we've been to Letchworth Cemetery. And we document everything we get. I mean, that's really what we're about, is really the evidence and trying to make some kind of sense out of the evidence.
Yeah.
And I've come to realize that it's almost impossible, because each spirit is as individual as a fingerprint.
Exactly.
That's always been something I've said for 40 years.
Right.
And I started like you. My interest grew. Yeah. From Hans Holzer.
Yeah.
As a kid, my interest in this, I remember I was in junior high school, I told the story last week, but I'll tell it again, it's real quick. I cut out of school because it was in the paper that he was coming to Staten Island to investigate a house on Grimes Hill. Now, where my junior high school was right below Grimes Hill.
I'll be there.
So I said, I can't pass this up.
Right.
So I skipped school. It was a rainy day, not realizing Grimes Hill is gigantic. I had no idea where I was going. I didn't have an address. I thought I was just going to run into him. It was him and Sybil Leak, if you remember Sybil Leak.
Yes.
Yes.
He was working with Sybil Leak. It was on a house on Grimes Hill. But that's kind of, it's been something that's been in me since, like, I was a little kid.
Right.
I've never really experienced anything as a kid that I would say is paranormal, but the interest in trying to find out And this is the thing that makes me crazy, because I know I'll never do it. It's to try to piece together what that experience is once you die.
Yeah.
Well,
I
you're
mean,
talking to a guy who died twice. Okay, I mean, that's no bullshit. Okay, my heart stopped when I was 19. I got electrocuted. And then I had a near-fatal heart attack at 50, and then I just had another VTAC, and I left it. I was unresponsive. I scared the hell out of my wife and daughter. And I'll tell you, my first experience at 19, before they started writing these books about NDEs and all this crap.
Right.
I saw people. I didn't see anybody I recognized, probably because of my age. So I didn't see anybody, but the experience was euphoric. That much I remember, and it was a euphoria that I've never felt since, and I will someday feel again. The second time I died, I was more sad, because I'm enjoying my life. I have a great wife. I have
and you have your family.
Great daughters. I have great granddaughters. I'm having a ball.
Yeah.
You know, so
you're
I
in a different situation.
You know, yeah, I don't want to leave the party. So it would have been sadness, but I knew that if it happens, there'd be this euphoric feeling. Now, maybe it's because I ain't going down the other place. I don't know. But, yeah, it's a euphoric feeling. And consequently, I have always wondered what it's like to be on the other side. Why are these people doomed? Is it purgatory? Can they see?
I don't know so much they're doomed. Everybody kind of assumes that, but I tell you the truth. We went to a lot of places. We've done a lot of investigations.
Right.
And I'm going to sound like Will Rogers. But I really can honestly say I haven't met a spirit in any of these places where we've captured very clear EVPs. I mean, I've proved it to myself. I don't care, you know, if people think I'm crazy, because I was there and I know what we did, okay? And these voices are coming from nowhere, okay? And they're clear.
Sure.
And the thing that fascinates me that I can't get over is I want to know what they see. Can they see me? I ask this a million times every time I do an investigation. How many of us are in the room, including yourself? 9 times out of 10, we'll get the number of people plus 1 or 2. On an EVP.
Ain't that something?
No, I mean, that stuff, and I document it. And that's the stuff that, to me, you can be logical, and believe me, I don't go in there as a believer, and I don't go in there as a non-believer. Every location I go to, I'm an open book. Whatever, I mean, a blank slate, open book, whatever you want to call it. I walk in, and it talks to me. It tells its story. I don't tell it a story. I want to know its history.
Well, Marcia knows. I mean, I've always believed they can see us for sure, because I wanted to capture some of our sounds. Way back in 1970, I borrowed a real good Sony tape recorder. I actually have the sounds of the exorcism 3.5 hours on tape. But every time I hit the tape and they'd make a sound, whether it be the arguing or... The one I really wanted to capture was the wailing. No sooner than I hit the record button, it stopped.
It's like
so
you
I knew
do.
They could see me.
Yeah.
And in the
they
end,
don't want it.
Right.
In the end, I calmed them down a bit by, I guess I was going mad. I basically said that, you know, I'm going to burn this freaking place down. And I really meant it. And they must have been attached to things there or to the building or to whatever, that space. And they didn't want me to turn it into rubble. And they knew
did
I
you
meant
ever research,
it.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm just dying. I wanted to ask this the whole time. Did you ever research the history of that building?
Some.
No, other than it was built in 1892. No, I never did. And I had a medium contact me a year ago. And she really, really hit a nerve, because I get a lot of emails. I get them from all over the world. It's amazing. But I found out that there are at least 3 other buildings in that neighborhood. One is actually on the same street. They're all active.
Something had to go down there. I mean, it's
got to go. Yeah.
This medium contacted me, and she knew nothing of my emails or the other buildings. And she basically said she had the feeling that it was the original landowners, that they were going to drive anybody mad. You know, and I can't disagree, because as you know, you never, you know, I focused on one name, because it was the name that was on the pornography that I found. And but you never get formally introduced to your ghost.
No, you
don't know.
Actually,
who it is, or, you know.
I got a little story after you're done, but about introductions.
Yes.
We did a place called the Selma Mansion, okay? That's in Pennsylvania. That was originally built by Andrew Porter, who was a colonel in the Revolutionary War, okay? After the war, he became rose to the rank of surveyor general in Pennsylvania. His family was very influential. David Rittenhouse Porter, you can go down the list. There was one that was an aide de camp to Ulysses S. Grant during the Civil War. It stayed in his family and passed through marriage to the Knox family and then to the Fournance family. Okay? The last person who lived there in that mansion was Ruth Fournance, who died in either the, I believe it was the early 80s, 1980s. And when we were in there, I said, "Who am I speaking to?" And you hear it. We got it through the spirit box, which we had at the fastest possible setting in reverse mode. You hear the name Ruth Fournance as clear as a bell. We ask, "Where is she?" And I was shooting the session, the spirit box session.
Right.
And the answer came through the box by Stephen. Point blank. Very pleasant. Unthreatening. My wife was touched during that particular investigation. Nothing was threatening there. It was almost like we were very respectful to her. And, you know, the respectful of that time period, respect was, and courtesy was a primary in the 1700s, the 1800s.
Sure.
Right? So we tried to address this whole investigation with that in mind. And I tell you the truth, she responded, and it was one of the more pleasant, you know, experiences that I've ever had, that she actually acknowledged and did respond and said her name, Ruth Fournance.
Yeah, it'd be nice to ask her why she's still around.
Yeah, I did ask that. I asked that when we were doing an investigation. I didn't ask it at that particular time, but another investigation, and that was at Fort Mifflin in the officers' quarters. There was a woman, it was for officers and their wives, and there was a woman there who supposedly lost two children to yellow fever. And then she died of yellow fever. And her name was, I believe, Elizabeth. I've drawn a blank now, but whatever her name was, it came through. We said, "Who are we speaking to?" We got the name Elizabeth. Okay? And then we said, we're very sorry, we heard that you lost two children. She said, "No, three."
Three.
And we said, "Three." And we checked with the historian, and they said, "Well, it could have been three." They didn't keep the records were really kind of lost or destroyed or throughout the time of Fort Mifflin. I mean, it was completely destroyed by the British. Then it was rebuilt. It was used as a Civil War prison for Confederate soldiers. And we asked one in one of the bastions, "Where were you captured?" And they answered, "Appomattox."
Wow.
I'll be damned.
Which is not too far into Virginia from where that's probably where they would send them. They'd send them to Fort Mifflin. I mean, we've gotten direct responses, and we get, you know, like I said, it's almost like you get these little pieces of a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you're trying to put them together, but like I said, each individual case that the spirit that you're talking to is as individual as a fingerprint, you can't say one thing across the board. Some, I don't believe, a trap. Some stay for whatever reason. Like the woman in Fort Mifflin, we said, "Why do you stay here? Are you trapped?" She said, "Why?" We said, "Why won't you leave?" She goes, "Because I'm." It said, I don't think it said it because it said, I'm too romantic. She evidently had a romantic attachment to that place or her husband or whatever it was.
Right.
I mean, that's weird,
that's
right?
That's what I've said for years, that you keep hearing this crap of they had unfinished business. Well, I've worked with, unfortunately, a lot of people being in the military and the medical field who passed on, and there's been a few who passed on pleasantly, quietly, moved on, and there's been the traumatic ones a lot. And, now there's people I could see who they would say that they had unfinished business. But like Steve just said, there's an Ed earlier, kind of a two-parter here. I think they can see us from the other side because I've had that too. We packed up on investigations to leave, and then all of a sudden we start hearing voices. So they're like, okay, y'all idiots, y'all done packed your crap up, now watch this. And they start chatting.
I believe that.
We got to unpack our crap and go back to work. So, that sucks, but it happens. But then on the other hand, I think a lot of times they do know who we are, but there's those ones like the romantic who wants to stick around. Maybe they like the house. Maybe they like the time period. Maybe there's another loved one there and they stay with them. I think that you can't really answer or have a blanket saying, well, they all die because of whatever.
If I can interrupt, a lot of them don't even know they're dead yet.
And that too.
A lot of them are there, and they don't understand what's going on because they don't believe that they're dead.
Right. And I worked on people like that in the military. There was one dude, unfortunately, blown right out of his boots. I mean, I expected to find 2 feet, but totally gone. Dude never even knew he died. So, he's probably still wandering around there. Pilots who crash planes, that kind of thing. They hit the ground at like doing 500 knots and 30 feet off the deck. You're kind of done before you know it. That kind of thing. So I think Tracy's right on that.
Well, I'll tell you a story. I had 27 years working on airplanes, and I used to work for Delta Airlines. Okay, Delta, so here's your spot. But anyway, and they had an L-1011 that was haunted. And what had happened was we finally figured out they kept seeing the captain, like a pilot, wandering around in the aisles, walking up and down the aisles and stuff. And we had come to maintenance, and we actually did a lot of research on it, found out that there was a captain that had a heart attack and died on that airplane. And obviously that's what he loved to do, and that's what he thought he was still going to do. And he was still on that airplane. And there was actually written accounts of people that had seen him and said, well, why is the captain back here? Who's flying the airplane? And they'd say, well, no, everyone's up there that should be up there. And there was numerous accounts of things that's happened, but yet we finally figured out that this gentleman did actually pass away in this airplane on a trip one time.
Now, Ed's house up in Chicago, focusing back up there, and I've said this on a lot of air investigations, is a lot of times they're like onions. I don't think that, a ghost is a ghost is a ghost. There's usually different things going on. Sometimes there's just one entity there. Sometimes there's not. Up there where you guys were at, you definitely had poltergeist activity, the noisy thing.
You had in a way. I'm sorry, Ray.
No, that's okay. Go ahead, Ed.
In a way, it now at my age and what I know and people I've known, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, we were in a neighborhood of houses that were built in the late 1800s. They held funerals in the front rooms, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, that's what they always did then.
But
exactly.
There's one factor that I really truly believe, and that is that they had, when a person built a house in 1800 or earlier, they had visions of living there their whole lives. Their children would live there their whole lives, and on and on.
Right.
Unlike us, where we just move from place to place. I mean, Marcia and I hopped from Branson to Springfield, just snapped our fingers, and we're gone. They had a different sense of domain. than we have.
That's right.
So I think that does have something to do with it, that their sense of domain.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, there is. It's the ownership of the property. And I tell Miriam this all the time, being former military, you know, it's wherever I have my rucksack is where I'm at home. So it don't matter to me. We can pack up and leave tomorrow. But you're right, back in the day, there's still places back of home where it's still, you know, my same people living there. I remember being a young boy, 13 or so, had an uncle laid out. They used to take the doors down, lady mowed on the table, had to wake overnight. And then we went out and buried him in back the next day. You know, and that's part of the home place, and that's going to stay part of the home place, boy, don't matter what we do. And,
right.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, you know, I tell people all the time down here, people are buried everywhere, Dave. Think of all the people through history. There's people buried everywhere, and not just the cemeteries. I mean, you know, out back behind the old shed, the old oak tree, you know, granddaddy, grandma's out there. Who knows who's buried out there? Somebody fell down the old days, died, never even knew it. Bear came up, dragged him off through the woods, that kind of thing.
Well, that's like I was saying last week, right? Remember I was talking about, or you and I were talking about, like when I was a kid and I went into that house that was supposedly haunted, which turned out to be not haunted.
Yeah.
And I looked around and I saw the stuff. It was an old broken-down farmhouse in upstate New York, and we were kids, and we had heard there was a murder there, and we naturally, being kids, wanted to go see it, and we went there, and we got there at nighttime, and the two guys I was with chickened out, but I went in with a flashlight, and at first I was, you know, like the ghost in Mr. Chicken, Don Knotts, shaking,
yeah.
And my eyes popping out. But then I began to look around. It turned out that the whole story was fabricated. It was an urban legend. There was nothing ever happened there. But I looked around and I began to see all the little remnants that were left behind, like the peeled wallpaper had little, like, blue flowers on it in one room, and it was all water stained. And I realized that at one time this was new. This was somebody's hopes, their dreams. This was their place. This is where they were going to live. They were going to have a family. They went through all the holidays. They probably had people over for Thanksgiving, other family members. And now that's all gone, so something of that energy's got to remain behind, especially in these older places.
Yeah, well, when we did Paranormal Witness, I knew we were making good TV, and I really didn't want to do it. My kids and my grandkids forced me to do it, actually, because I knew they weren't going to. It's not a documentary, for Christ's sake. But they made their thing, and they were nice people, and when we all watched it, the season finale, we sat as a family, and when it opened up, I mean, I was still kind of raw. I had never talked publicly until I spoke to Paranormal Witness.
Yeah.
And they had a stop camera 3 or 4 times during my 2 days in the chair. But we watched it as a family, and I thought, okay, I can make it through this. And when the first scene opened up and it showed the young man looking at the building, this flood of feelings came over me, emotion, that if all my dreams, everything that I dreamed of, all my security, the roof for my family, got dashed by this damn experience. And I started to tear up, and my youngest daughter grabbed my hand. The rest of it I enjoyed. I mean, Marcia and I even laughed through some of it, but... Yeah, you put your hopes and your whole life into a property.
And especially in the old days where people, like you said, today we move.
Oh,
in the old days, they set up roots. And some of those houses stayed in the family for, like I said, like the Fornance family. That was originally the Porters. That stayed for generations.
Yep. And that was the idea. You know.
Yeah.
That's what it was like. Families stuck together. You never know. It's just, you know, I feel so sorry for people that are going through it now, even though there is so much more hope now than there was. It's still, you know, it's just a horrendous thing to go through. Extremely
horrific. Yeah, but you have a lot of groups. You have to be careful. There's a lot of groups out there that, in my opinion, see these TV shows, think they know what they're doing. Like you said, you don't need anybody coming in burning sage because they saw it on some TV show,
right,
and they think they're going to get rid of stuff. I mean, that's why we, that's really why we don't do private residence investigations. We stick to the big places where if we stir something up, we don't have to worry about it. that's what they're making money on.
Sure.
Yeah, I really don't believe a lot of it. I heard this one show, I never seen it, but there's one guy, I guess, who yells at the ghosts and screams,
yeah,
and, you know. And then you got the guy who finds haunted stuff every week and every episode, and solves a ghostly problem.
You got to remember, it's TV. TV is an entertainment medium.
Right.
Like you said before, and it's true, they're not documentaries.
No.
You have to separate yourself from a documentary standpoint to an entertainment standpoint. If most people did go on like an investigation like we do, there's a lot of times it's super boring. You're sitting there, you're talking.
It really is.
You're sitting in a room talking to empty air. I mean, you start to feel a little crazy after a while. And 9 times out of 10, I've come away and not realized what I had till I reviewed the evidence.
Sure.
So you hit the nail on the head. It is good entertainment. I must have had, I don't know how many inquiries on Facebook and emails about what were my feelings on The Conjuring, you know. And my answer was the same. It was a good movie. It's not a documentary.
Yeah, movies are movies.
I mean, they didn't have thermal switches on mechanical cameras in 1973. There was no such thing. What you had was a long wire with a button to take a picture remotely. And,
right,
you know, you couldn't have a hidden room that had the furnace in it.
Right.
Couldn't have been too hidden, you know, if the people were going to live in that building. So, yeah, there was a lot of stuff in there, but it was a good movie.
I didn't actually see it yet.
Yeah, well, people,
oh, you'll see some stuff.
Crap.
I mean, that they had birds flying around the house. Maybe they saw the tenants, but they had them flying around at night. And
birds don't fly at night.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly. And there was a whole lot of stuff that, you know, people, someone like yourself is going to watch it, and you're going to go, oh boy, you know.
Usually, I don't go to the. Can I tell you the truth? I don't go to those movies. Like, I'm waiting for Kick-Ass 2 to come out. That's where my head is at. I don't want to see ghosts. I want to laugh and see something ridiculous.
Yeah, Marcia and I didn't go to it either. We got it. We downloaded it for free. got a copy from Europe, and a DVD copy. It was a good copy. Had some Chinese words at the bottom of it, but.
But you can't beat that.
Yeah.
Should have Chinese food and sat down and watched the movie.
Yeah.
But if you saw it, you'd pick out those parts and you'd say, no, that didn't happen, and. We have to have a friend who's a friend of Lorraine Warren's, so we kind of know some of the other stuff. They kind of took 2 or 3 stories and crammed them together and then added some good effects for the viewers, and it's okay. I mean, I always laugh, though, you know, because you see this all the time. Paranormal Witness did it, The Conjuring did it, all these shows did it. A person comes home, and their house is trashed. And they immediately look towards something and blame it, okay?
Yeah, I would call the cops.
Exactly. No one calls the damn police. You know, if I came home and my house is trashed, I'm calling 911.
Yeah, sure. Somebody broke in. Who knows what's missing?
Yeah, I'm not going to blame my wife's dowel, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
The Conjuring has a scene like that in it. So some of it I found humorous I don't know what was real or what's Memorex on there, so, but it's good entertainment.
I mean, I go back to, like, if I want to watch a horror movie, I don't want it based on fact. I want it to be, you know, give me Christopher Lee as Dracula.
I agree with you.
You know what I mean? Bring back the old universe. Bring the Creature from the Black Lagoon.
But the problem is today, it's like Ray and I talk frequently offline, and reality is more frightening than the paranormal today.
Absolutely. I get more scared with the news.
You must have a real news show up there.
Yeah, I really do. When you see some of these horrific acts, these murders that happen, kids getting kidnapped and killed, and all this horrible stuff, I mean, that's, way scarier than any place I've ever been to.
Yeah, well, I have a big thing about it. I get really upset. I've called parole boards. I've called cities. I've called police departments. It's a wonder I'm still here that they didn't take me up. Some guy's in a big black SUV doesn't come and just grab me. But it pisses me off. I mean, how do you get a crime like pedophilia? It's incurable. Everybody knows it's incurable. And it's supposed to give us comfort that we know a 3- and 4-time offender is located on a register, so we know where he lives.
Yeah, I don't get that either. That really doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, you're
in
the more comfortable when you realize he lives down the street from you.
Yeah, I mean, and you know he's going to commit a crime again. And they do nothing. And there was one in Missouri. I call the Texas Parole Board, and I slammed him. I said, if you're going to let someone out like that, somebody on the parole board has to have enough courage and enough to take that person into their own house for 3 months. You know, and
so
if you want
to
be your own house. Yeah, and
how come they're not wearing
an
ankle bracelet?
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't blame
you. Know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Those electronic bracelets, so they track this guy's movements.
Actually, when Ed said he moved, when you said y'all were moving, Ed, I was like, well, maybe he is getting an ankle bracelet because I know. I was like, oh, my God, they did come to get him.
I got to be careful because, I do get opinionated sometimes, and I'm really fed up. I'm really fed up with a lot of the things, the way our society is going and what we're doing.
That's what I told Steve before we came on the air. I said, Ed's pretty opinionated like me. We have our opinions and we believe in them.
We're kind of on the same page on a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, you can't argue the point that, you know, you have children?
No, I don't.
Okay. If you had kids today, like I said, my granddaughters are now entering the teens. And they got to be protected and watched, and I didn't.
Yeah, me neither.
My mom and dad kicked my ass out when I was 8 or 9, and they'd say, come home at dark, you know.
Yeah.
It was a different world.
We played on swing sets that were made of metal, and that really hurt you if something happened. And, I mean, you know, I didn't go to the doctor unless I was getting ready to bleed out or I was unconscious.
Yeah,
exactly.
We were no geniuses. We'd have rock fights.
Yeah,
that's how smart we were as kids. We were about 12 or 13. We got a good idea. We'd have war and play it with rocks.
And look how we ended up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a bit older. We had spud guns. We had pea shooters. We had
spud
pocket
guns. Were cool. I remember them.
Bows and arrows. We had real darts. I remember I darted my brother in the head. I mean, with a real dart.
In the belly button.
I darted my cousin in the head after my brother got darted in the head.
Take a look at the old train sets, okay? On the old train sets from the 40s and early 50s, the transformer had two terminals on top.
That's right.
You attached these two wires to them and plugged it in the wall.
Like a Christmas tree.
If you set your hand on that, you were electrocuted. Or wood burners. You know, we had wood burners.
I told, things are much different today. Like I was telling Ray, when I was a little kid, I remember my father was a cop. He became a lieutenant detective, and he worked in long shifts. And he was a cop in Brooklyn. And then Manhattan, they shifted him around. Was a detective, burglary, then homicide. And I remember I was a little kid. I had a nightmare. I must have been about 5 or 6. And I go into my father's room, and I wake him up. I said, Dad, I'm scared. And, you know, I had this dream or whatever. He picked me up, sat me on his knee, and goes, you want to really be scared? Come in here and wake me up again.
Yep.
And he was right. I didn't go back in.
That's that's
he was military too. My father, World War II. He became a lieutenant colonel.
Wow.
Yeah, he was airborne, 82nd Airborne paratroopers. So he was behind the lines, and he was a tough guy. I mean, so if he says there's nothing to be scared of except him, I believed him. He gave me the face.
Well, Granddaddy said a ghost won't hurt you, but he'll make you hurt yourself. But I found that to be actually untrue, and unless you, well, you know, we have our definitions of things. I think a ghost is a non-intelligent being that kind of keeps doing what it's doing. But there are other things that can hurt you. And I'm glad you guys, you know, ended up as well as you did, considering where you started. And I know it did test y'all's, I know you are, I believe you guys are definitely truly soulmates, and that has held up over time. And but it did test you in the beginning.
Oh, boy. Did it ever.
You know, I can swear in a Bible that that was the weakest point in 47 years. That was that was our weakest point in 47 years. And I mean, what it did to Dan and Diane, it destroyed their marriage. It destroyed my sister's marriage. They couldn't take the torment. Somehow Marcia and I made it through it, and thank God.
Well, I think we got into it with both feet, and I think that really had a lot to do with it because we felt like we were doing something about it.
We took action.
Yes, and that gives you strength. You know, it can also hurt you, but it'll give you strength. And you've got to, we knew we had to stay there a while longer until we could save up enough money to get another building. And I was just like, no, I'm not doing this that long a time. So I'd start doing things to fight back. And
what really hurt me actually was the church.
Yeah.
You know, when I finally came to the conclusion that, okay, we're dealing with something that I can't control and my family's at risk, when the church turned their back on us, that's what, I mean, I grew up a strict Catholic, a Latin altar boy, and I was taught to rely on them. And, boy, they slammed the door in our face and told me to get my head examined.
Yep.
And that crushed me. I mean, that really crushed me.
Well, you thought you could count on them. You know, they're supposed to be, you know, from God. They're supposed to be stronger. And they're supposed to want to help us. And they just didn't. But, you know, I think they'd had their fill of that.
Well,
house.
I don't blame the whole organization. I mean, it was one priest, and I'll always remember him. But he didn't know how to handle it, and he basically...
didn't believe it?
I don't think... I knew he believed it, because he had an experience at our place when he came to the house blessing that blew us all away. I mean... he lifted his holy water dispenser, a little brass dispenser, to bless the house, and it exploded.
Really?
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
This was before I believed in the haunting, and in fact, my whole family was there. In Paranormal Witness, it shows just Marcia and I, but actually there were like 14 people there, and we didn't know what the hell happened. I mean, I knew what the utensil was because I'd been an altar boy, but I never saw brass shatter.
No, me either.
He picked it up and he ran for it. And, I mean, literally, he knew what he was up against, I believe. In fact, he probably knew the building before we even got there, once he saw which building we were going to. No, I knew he knew. It's just they weren't trained to do anything about it.
Well, why didn't he go to... my question is, you would think he would go to his higher-ups. I mean, seeing brass explode.
Yeah.
I mean, is pretty dramatic.
Yes.
Well, except that, you know, I wrote a nice novel, and it's very, very well researched, and I did it in a way that I could display what a demon is like, because my protagonist is a non-exorcist, so he's naive. And basically the Catholics asked the demon to fill out an application to be exorcised. You got to talk a different language, you got to do this, you got to levitate something. Demons aren't going to do that.
They have a set of criteria that they want met, the church.
Right.
Evidently. Yeah, and they think
the
demon...
making someone a saint.
They believe a demon is going to comply with that and want to be exorcised. That's absurd. I mean, that whole...
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, really.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, if you read the Bible, if you believe in the Bible, and you read the Bible, Christ didn't ask the demons to fill out an application. You know, he recognized it by behavior, and he struck them out. And I think you can recognize people by behavior today. I mean, if you and I were to go to a casino or somewhere where there's thousands of people, we'd pick one or two out that are possessed very easily. Very easily. Because the demons...
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I mean, there is a point where an obsessed person... You know, it goes through a series of stages, I believe, of
right.
obsession, oppression, and then finally possession.
Right.
And all they want to do is kill you. And when,
so.
When you see a person who's killing themselves and harming themselves intentionally, you know, maybe a psychiatrist would label them all different kinds of things, but I don't. You know, I don't think that 800-pound guy is hungry and filling his grocery cart. I think he's killing himself, and I think that demon will go on to someone else when he's done.
Yeah, I believe that, Dave.
I think you're absolutely right.
But, when the church slammed its door on us, it hurt me. It hurt because I was always led to believe that that's where you went for help, and it's for spiritual matters.
Yeah,
that's
like turning into a cop for help
and
get a ticket.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had that happen in other religions, try to contact them, and they won't even, you know, even though it was their faith, you know, because I tried, like, okay, what's your background, what's your faith, and you try to find somebody, like, well, I don't want to say Methodist, whatever, and they won't even talk to them. And I'm like, well, you know, you profess to preach and to believe in the paranormal itself. You know, you're preaching religion, something we can't prove, but you have faith in it. Why don't you help these people? Well, you know, it couldn't be that because that doesn't exist. So I was like, okay. So, and I've actually said this to preachers. I said, okay, so... You're either going to change your mind or you're going to have to change your faith, one of the two, because they'll say, well, every ghost is a demon and that kind of thing. I was like, okay, you fill in the blank, dude, Father, Son, Holy, what? So now you're saying
exactly. That
God is a demon? Is that what you're saying? Well, that's not what I'm saying. That's a different kind. Well, what are you talking about? You just said all of them are demons. So either you got to change your mind or change your faith, one of the two. And, but, you know, they back down from that as well. But, yeah, we had that case with Keith, same thing. And the deacon actually saw the entity push him down the stairs. His intestines spewed forth because he had had surgery. The staples fell out or popped out, and they thought the guy actually died, and the church wouldn't even come over and help him out, even though the deacon actually saw this happen. But I tell people,
that's
you know, bad. Yeah, it is. It was very bad. So I've kind of lost faith in a lot of the religions as well. You know, either walk the walk, talk the talk, you know, do both or shut up. And I understand, Theo. I've been afraid, like, not as bad as you guys were. I didn't go through that kind of ordeal. But, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, if you don't get scared on some of the things that happen to you, you know, you're not right. Because there are some bad things out there.
Yeah, we've got a friend. I think I told you about her. She's now recovering, but she had two broken ribs. Her mother lost her front teeth. Horrific experience. I mean, just horrific.
Did she? She did make it out of the institution.
Yeah, she's out and she's on the mend. but still very, very emotional on that subject. I don't know that she's ever told anybody every single thing that's happened. Little by little, she lets us, tells us more and more.
Yeah.
But it's a horrific subject, and yeah, those things happen, and who do you go to for help, you know?
You know, that's that. You get lost. Big time. Like, where do I go? Who do I turn to now?
Now, don't think it's any different.
To welcome to church.
Don't think it's that much different than years ago. People still think you bring up spirits or hauntings, and you still have a majority of the population that think you're crazy.
Unless
they experience it, you really can't convince anybody. I mean,
I even laugh at the paranormal community because the more solid the evidence, the less likely it's going to be believed.
Yeah, that's what I don't get.
When I was talking to a group of people, had I been able to take a picture of the old woman and said, you know, stay right there, smile, wham, I got your picture. If I were to hold that picture up today and say, here, this is our solid apparition, everybody would say it's just a picture of an old woman.
Yeah.
Even paranormal experts would say that's a picture of an old woman. So it's like, what the hell do you expect the paranormal to be like, these things to be like?
Yeah,
Wes Craven characters? I mean, Stephen King characters? Or
out of movies? Yeah, that's what I think. They have a movie mentality. I don't know what the hell they think. We got a shadow figure that's, you know, I put up on our Facebook page that we did from an old investigation, Eastern State Penitentiary, and we got it on thermal. Okay, so it's not a traditional picture.
Right.
But this thing is freestanding in an open doorway. You can't have a shadow if it's, they're saying, oh, it's your own cast shadow.
Sure.
Number one, it registers colder than the surrounding air. It was done in December. One guy's telling me, well, if you cast a shadow, it's always cooler. Yeah, in the sunlight, not in a dark prison room in December with no heat. It's going to be the same as the ambient temperature of the air.
No, I believe that. If you have, I mean, if you had an EVP that was as clear as my voice, let's say, everybody would say bullshit.
Yeah, I got one that at our last place at McGarrah's Inn. We said, are you mad because there's a lot of people in the house? Are you angry because there's a lot of people in the house? The building. And we got a voice, clear as a bell, on the camera's audio. I defy anybody to, I'll give you the footage. The camera's audio, it says, are you mad because there are people in the building? And a voice says, this is his home. Clear as a bell.
So you should drop some of those on a CD and give them to Ray one night to play.
Yeah, I should, because those, I mean, they're clear. I mean, they're on the camera's audio. I mean, there were two people in the shot. It was shot on a static camera. We're both on camera when that's recorded.
Yeah, no, there's a fellow in Kansas City named Rob Garcia, who's a real expert at EVPs. He's a real smart guy. He created an energy box that keeps his batteries from getting drained. He does some amazing stuff, but I listened to one of his EVPs, and they're scary. I mean, he had one where he said, where are you going? And it said, with you. Just clear.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
Well, hey, fellas.
What was that saying about the home wasn't really creepy? I mean, it was.
Steve.
Huh?
Sorry. We got 1 minute left.
Oh.
www.edwinbecker.com.
That's right. Edwinbecker.com. I'm actually putting that on Facebook right now. And
Or www.truehaunting.com.
True Haunting. That's right. That'll both get you there. Lynn, Thurston won your book, Ed. Thanks for supplying that for us. Marcia, thanks for being here with us. And so True Haunting, not an S on it, truehaunting.com, edwinbecker.com. I'm putting a link on Facebook right now for it. And Ed's on our webpage, of course. So make sure you get truehaunting.com. It's also got Famished, and that's a good one. And the other Banish, one. I can't remember.
Banished, Death List.
Yeah. That's right. There's a bunch of them out there. And
13 Chilling Tales.
All right. Well, we're out of here, everybody. Ed, hold on just a second, if you would, everybody. Please come back next week, Thursday at 9 o'clock p.m. We'll all be back, myself, Tracy, and Steve. And we're going to wish Ed the best. Y'all take care. We'll see you next week. Hang in there just a second, everybody, and we'll clear the airwaves here.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Nice meeting you, Ed.
Thank you.
Nice meeting you, too.
All right. Well, the air, we're clear of the show. People can still hear us talk. So, all right. So
well, I think I'm getting ready for bed, and I'm tired.
Well, you are you're an old part at heart, so I can
I know. I can't take all this entertainment. It's fun.
Oh, really is, yeah.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed hearing. Boy, I'd love to hear some more.
It's, tonight it's all about Ray. We're doing a Ray tribute tonight.
Yeah. It's his show. He'll pull the plug on anybody.
That's right. Where's that hang up button at, Stanley?
I mean, I would.
Yeah, everybody, this is the non, this is the non-public, what's the word I'm looking for here? For everyone. If you have any kids sitting around, we're going into the rated R part of the show. Put their phones in at 11 o'clock.
This is the unplugged version.
That's right.
Yeah.
But,
well, you know, Ed, I want to tell you something, Ed. You were talking about each ghost having a different personality and you really never meet your own ghost.
Right.
Right.
Well, you know, I got a story for you. When I was Wiccan, one of our tasks, or what we go through 12 months and one day of training, of course, to become a full-fledged witch, and then we get initiated and all that. But one of the things we did as an exercise was our high priestess wanted us to meet our guardian angel. You know, everyone supposedly has a guardian angel.
Yes. Yeah, I believe it.
Over them. Well, believe it or not, there's a process to go through. And actually, meeting even your guardian angel is a very difficult thing to do because you start meditating and you get into this mode, and there's actually instructions on how to do this out there. And first, it's like you see your guardian angel like behind the tree. She's sitting behind the tree, or he's sitting behind the tree, and you can't really even see them, but you can tell they're there and you can communicate with them. And basically what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to tell them your name and tell them that, you know, and introduce yourself like you're introducing yourself to somebody that you don't know. And then you have to build a relationship with them. And, like, nightly you'd meditate, and slowly you'd actually, like, be able to move around the tree where it's like your guardian angel is a shadow figure.
Right.
And then eventually she'll tell you, like, I learned my guardian angel's name was Maria. And I could actually, after doing this for a month, I could actually picture her, and I could actually have conversations with her. But there's a process of going through, even with your guardian angel, who's supposed to be the closest to you, of actually meeting them and going through a process of learning them and introducing yourself and actually proving to them that you aren't crazy, that you're sane enough to talk to them and know what you're getting into. And it's pretty amazing if you really look into that process. Maybe you can look it up on the internet sometime, and that'd be something, a little exercise that maybe y'all might like to do, because it's very, very, very entertaining, but yet you learn a lot too. And see, I'm into this to learn.
Right.
I that's my big thing, is I want to be the one that can tell somebody what happens after they die, which I know I'll never do that, but I would love to.
I'd love to be, I don't want to be the person, but I'd like to meet the person who eventually gets to sit down with an entity and find out everything there is about the other side.
But, you know, out of all the ghosts and all the EVPs and all the footage, have you ever witnessed any kind of evidence that there's a hell?
Thankfully not. Thankfully not.
I mean, really, can we say there's a hell? Because, like, in witchcraft, they don't believe in hell. I'm kind of in that middle thing of, I really don't know what to believe, but I've never had any on any investigation, any spirit say, I'm from hell, or except for maybe demonic, which to me, a demonic is a non-human entity.
I agree.
I agree with that.
I always have to believe there's a flip side to everything. So if you believe in heaven, you kind of have to believe there's a flip side.
Well, that's what it says anyway in the Bible. There'll always be an opposite to everything. But truthfully, my personal beliefs are it's not fire and brimstone. Actually, I think hell is very, very cold.
Yeah, I can't believe what they say hell is either.
Yeah.
Honestly, at my age now, and when I look at what's happened in society and the things we have to watch for today, I'm wondering if this isn't hell. All the trials and the crimes and the sin that's available to everybody, and you got to watch your children and people eating people's faces and fathers sticking their kids in microwaves.
Yeah,
oh, boy.
What the hell kind of, maybe we're in hell.
This is a big test.
Yeah. I think it's demonic, not hell, but, it has to be. There's no normal person that could do that.
Yeah. Well, guys, I'm going to get off the phone. I need to go to bed, and hell, I want to do tomorrow. And it's very nice talking to y'all, and I'll leave you with Ray and all that, and I'm going to go ahead and sign off.
Wonderful meeting you.
Yes.
Well, nice talking to y'all.
Wonderful meeting
you.
All
right.
See you, Trey.
Bye, Ray.
Bye. Night.
Good night.
You leaving, Ray?
Yeah, well, I guess so. I know it's getting kind of late and you're tired. I appreciate you. I didn't mean to keep you the whole time, but I appreciate you hanging out with us, man.
It was a ball. It was a ball. One of the most interesting shows I've been at. Very interesting.
I thought it was pretty interesting, too, because I learned more and... Marcia got to get in, and that was good. I was glad to get her perspective on things. And
I got some reading to do. I can't wait to read the book.
Yeah, it is. It's a really good book. It's it usually takes me now. I used to, like Marcia, I used to read three or four books a week, and I was reading that one. Daylight to dark, and even on my lunch break at the hospital, I had his book. Didn't take me too long to finish it, but I went back and read it again because it's. I wanted to make sure I got the whole story in them.
Well, I like the fact that it's not sensationalized. This I know from the horse's mouth. You're hearing that this is not. It's not like when they wrote Amityville Horror, Jay Anson got involved, they all sat around, concocted stuff, they saw a movie deal.
Well, that's why I don't believe, or I take with a grain of salt, I did have this submitted to a publisher 20 years ago, and two of them came back, and I won't name their names, but they're well known. Both liked it. One of them said it's too lighthearted. The other one said that if I could have just some additional memories to make it more commercially appealing. So they wanted me to alter the story. And
you to creep it up, probably.
Yeah, and I know what publishers do. And so even if you're talking to someone, I know a woman who's a psychic, and she wrote a great book, and I helped her with it, actually. Instead of doing self-publishing, she went to Llewellyn. She had 80,000 words, a perfect 200 pages. They immediately cut 25% of her book. Now, when the book was released, so it should have been 150 pages, and she was crying about it to me. When the book came out, it was 290 pages.
Huh.
Somehow 140 pages. Yeah, so I don't even trust true stories if they've come through publishers because publishers want to sell books.
Right.
So It's one of the things I love about self-publishing is you can, you know, you don't get the editing and the professional stuff, and you might find some crap in my books, but it's uncensored.
It's what really happened.
Yeah, it's what really happened. It's uncensored. And when I write a novel, I some of my stuff isn't exactly politically correct. You know, Death List, I mean, it's not for human rights activists, I'll tell you that.
No, it is not. But it's a great read, though.
But it's what I feel, and, you know, and a publisher probably would have made changes all over the damn place.
Oh, yeah.
But at my age, of course, I'm not looking to earn a living at it, and at my age, 67, I really don't give a crap. I'm going to say, it's one of the nice things about getting older.
You don't care anymore.
I just don't give a shit, you know. And
I'll show you.
You know, if I'm in the store and someone's checking me out, they're an idiot, I tell them, you're an idiot, you know. And I think if I'm still alive at 70, I think then I get a license to just smack them with my cane.
Smack them one.
And they're
but yeah,
they, busy all damn day.
You're probably right. The way these kids are, I feel sorry. I mean, now with the apps, I mean, shit, you know. Two generations from now, they're going to need a GPS to find the frickin' bathroom in their house.
Yeah.
And they do a commercial. Ray, did you see the commercial where this couple comes out of the store and they can't find their car in the parking lot? They use their GPS.
Yeah.
Their phone.
Really?
Yeah. And it's a commercial. And it's like two of the most stupid people in the world, you know. They can't find their car in the parking lot. That used to be a joke. And now they turned it into reality. Yeah, I get opinionated.
You brought up a good point, though, which I really like, about the self-publishing. That's the equivalent of, like, a documentary as opposed to something that's published that's all slipped up, which is like a fictionalized movie.
No, it truly is, because they want to move books. And, I don't fault them for that.
No, that's their business.
That is their business, much like Paranormal Witness. When they told our story, they took stuff out of context, they over-dramatized it and that, but I knew they were going to just make good TV. I mean...
They're trying to keep an audience.
Yeah, I mean, if someone... I've got a couple people talking to me about the movie rights for True Haunting. And I told my wife, I said, you know, we got one or two ways to go. One is we take less money and more control over the end product if we want a true story. Let's say keep it as close as we can. The other way is just to take a bag of money and tell them to hell with it. Do whatever you want, you know. It's the only choices you have.
Well, it's up to you to make the decision whether you want to tell your story or you want to entertain. That's
exactly.
It makes a divide. If you're telling your story, then you go with the less money. If you want to entertain people, make it entertaining or whatever, then you might as well profit on it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the same with television.
I
mean, TV is about ratings. You know, that's why I do what I do. I'm not TV. If I don't get anything, I don't make an episode.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I don't want to mention any names, but this guy who crowned himself the godfather of paranormal, who goes
yeah.
and finds haunted stuff under houses every week.
Yeah.
That's absurd. I mean, that's... But good TV. You know, I won't fault him for that. It's entertaining.
Well, the godfather was Harry Price. Nobody even knows who the hell he is.
Yeah, no...
The first English ghost hunter. I mean, this guy was legit back in the turn of the century, old school with the powder on the floor and the bells tied to a string. That was his motion detector. There were no recorders. And he wrote books. And then later there was Hans Holzer. So how could, you know, the guy you're talking about be the godfather? I mean, Hans Holzer was before him.
Yeah, I know. He's self-appointed.
Oh, okay.
He's self-appointed.
He hasn't seen Haunted Collector yet, apparently.
What?
I said, you haven't seen Haunted Collector. He is the godfather, apparently.
Oh, is he?
Oh, yeah.
I thought the Godfather was Marlon Brando.
No, see, you should have been reading your emails. It was in there.
Yeah, no, he believes he believes paranormal started with him being on TV or something.
Yeah, exactly.
The only show of all the shows that really that I like is I do like Ghost Adventures. I have to admit, I'm one members of the Ghost Adventures crew because they're entertaining. There's a lot of comedy to their stuff. They break it up. They give you some history. You know, they play. I believe they play stuff up. I mean, you can't be getting chills every 2 minutes.
Sure.
Yeah, but I think their EVPs are, you know, some of them are a little sketchy, but I think the evidence they get is fairly fairly accurate. And, I respect them. You know, they have their own approach. He's the guy who yells. He goes in and provokes.
Yeah, I don't like that provoking crap, especially.
Yeah, that's what he does to get it on camera.
Yeah.
And, at least he's, got the courage of his convictions to go in there and try to get some activity that he can actually document. And he succeeded to an extent. And like I said, the show also has a funny side. I mean, it's more entertaining than some of the other shows that have become very, very bland and predictable.
Yeah.
I agree, but I can't help but feel that he may pay a price for that.
He does. Yeah. He has. According to, if you can believe him, he said he has. He's undergone two exorcisms. He's had attachments. He's been scratched. Well, I got scratched, supposedly. I didn't feel goosebumps, chills, or anything, but I did have three marks on my back from the last investigation. I don't remember hitting into anything. I had a black shirt on. There was no dirt. I was in a basement where you would get some of the, if an old basement, you're going to get dust from the walls or whatever you hit into. So, that, like I said, I didn't feel threatened. I didn't feel goosebumps. I was down there checking a camera.
Yeah, after my haunting, I mean, Marcia and I ran for the hills, and I wanted no part of it, but we wound up keeping friends with a psychic, Joseph DeLuise, and the exorcist. And then just by chance, we ran into a guy. His book is out there. He's passed away. His name is Olaf Johnson. He was a telekinetic, and I can't even tell you guys the stuff he did. He worked for NASA in the 60s.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
I think I have heard of him.
Yeah, he was assigned to Edgar Mitchell, and he could communicate mentally if all hired equipment failed. And, when I heard that we were at dinner with him, and I thought to myself, bullshit, I'm from Chicago, bullshit. I gave him some of my skepticism, and I said, that's a long distance and this, that, and the other. He said, do me a favor. He said, anybody got a deck of cards? And the woman who was hosting a dinner, she got a deck of cards, and he handed them to Marcia. And he said, Marcia, go in the other room where Ed can't see you at all. So she went to the other room, and he says to me, Ed, he said, be honest with me. He said, don't screw me around. He said, you're going to see a color, and then you're going to see either a number or a picture, and then you're going to see what the symbol is. And I said, okay. I'm thinking to myself, yeah, right. So I closed my eyes, and I see red, okay. I see the number two. I see hearts. He yells in the other room, what card are you holding up? Marcia yells out, two of hearts. 52 straight times.
He did it 52 straight times.
Yeah, and when I was done, and then he told me some other stuff about myself, and he basically could read your mind. And he said to me, he said, both Marcia and I are great receivers. He said, we may not be great senders, but we're great receivers. But he could read your mind like a telephone book. He could move objects, small objects. Phenomenal guy. And
but did he have any theory as to why he had this ability?
No. I don't know. I got his book, and in fact I got an autographed copy. I forgot what he said in there, but what he told me I always remember, because he fell on his head. He was a roofer with his father in Sweden, fell off a roof, and when he came out of it, all of a sudden he was hearing people's thoughts. And now the government's trying to discredit him. If you Google him, there's all kinds of discredit because they don't want it known.
I was shocked when he told me
they had tons of hundreds of thousands of dollars invested in psychics in the late 60s.
That's right.
And so I kept friends, and Marsha and I stayed on top of these things, but I never really went out in the paranormal. And I, up until my book was released, I never watched anything on TV. So I had no idea what an EMF was or what an EVP was, and someone had to tell me.
Well, a lot of that stuff scares me out there anymore. I didn't used to be, but, you know, your story, for one, and me picking up an attachment last year for year before last that followed me through last year that almost killed me, literally, almost every day.
That was how many months, right? That lasted how many months?
It lasted a good year.
That's a long time.
It was. I mean, I was, I ain't kidding you, I was coming close to dying 2 and 3 times a day, dude. It was, I'm amazed I'm still here. And that's, you know, Tracy finally came to me that one day because he wasn't calling, he wasn't coming around, he wasn't doing any investigations. Finally, you know, I was like, dude, what's going on? And he says, you got something attached to you and it's affecting everybody and it's trying to kill you. And I was like, well, I never said anything to him, you know, about the fight for life every day. And I was like, well, you're right. And so I started working on it, and it took a while, but I finally got rid of it. And every day is not that life or death thing anymore. But that's why, you know, I don't care if I ever do another investigation after that one, because I just don't want to walk into that crap again.
But you brought up a point that something could attach to you just visiting grandma's grave.
That's true.
What do you say?
You brought up that point last week, Ray, that something could potentially attach to you just visiting someone in the cemetery, a relative.
Yeah. And I believe that now. I didn't used to, but I do now.
Yeah, all I know is I stay in a sanctified environment. I've got 5 angels outside this house. Not obnoxious or conspicuous, but there's 5 statues. And Marcia makes rosaries, of course. And she's been making them for years. She made 10 of them for the Vatican. And I've got more blessed crucifixes in this house than probably there is in any cathedral. And I won't go off on... I've been offered to go hunting and investigating and all this crap, and it's like, no way. No way.
You had a bad, a really bad taste of it, if you know what I'm saying. And
I still get PTSD. I can't watch that whole, our video of the exorcisms on YouTube, and I can't watch it all the way through. I can smell the room. I can feel the feeling. It's terrible, and I don't want any part of it.
We got, like I said, though, I'm going to be honest, and I tell you the truth. I can honestly say that in all of the investigations we've done quite a few, I really honestly never, maybe I'm just lucky, I never really felt anything threatening. You know, I always go in a respectful manner, and they've been human spirits. They're not inhuman. The ones I've dealt with, and they've appeared to give us intelligent responses.
You got the perspective of an investigator. It's like a good friend of mine is an investigator, and you don't have to live there. I think if you took one of these active places and you lived there, and maybe at some point they decide you're violating their domain,
then you got problems.
Yeah, and it's like, and it wears on you. When I hear these people tell their quote-unquote true stories, okay, and they say that they lived someplace that was like that for 10 years, they're full of shit.
Yeah, they are.
I was a brave.
You couldn't take it for 10 years.
I was a brave, bold, unbelieving son of a bitch when I was young, and in 8 months, I mean, it had me walking on eggshells, totally agitated, sleep deprived. You can't tolerate that. I got out of there as quick as I could. I mean, so when I hear someone say they lived there 10 years,
it can't be.
Yeah, it couldn't have been that bad.
Unless it's just, you know, in some instances now, and I believe this, and I don't really can't swear to it, but I do believe that sometimes what people think are guardian angels could even be relatives watching over people.
I believe that's possible.
Marcia blames that on me. Every holiday season, I mean, without fail, we'll have orbs all over the place. And, in fact, if you look at my Facebook picture, look at my oldest daughter over all the way on the right-hand side, you'll see an orb over her shoulder. And she says they're my relatives. I don't know why they're my relatives and not her relatives.
Yep, you're
but she says my relatives come visit me every holiday season.
Yeah, it's over her right shoulder, left shoulder.
Yeah, I've got another one in the mix there where my Shih Tzu is evaluating it. It showed up in a picture, and you can see my Shih Tzu looking at it. She puts her tail down to protect herself, which dogs do, but she's kind of studying it. She doesn't feel threatened, you know. But
she doesn't quite understand it.
Yeah. What I did is I was just snapping pictures of my two granddaughters, and this one showed up, and there was my Shih Tzu Starlet staring at this orb. So I believe animals and babies can see these things.
Well, we caught them on infrared in pitch black conditions with the infrared camera. And they're not dust particles because when you see them in motion, these things move incredibly fast. We caught one at Montfort Farm. That in slow-mo mode, it's a blur. My wife had the good eye. She spotted it. I didn't even see it. And then when I slowed the video down, you can see this thing moving towards the camera, which was drained then. After that thing moved towards it, we went up to shoot. The camera was dead.
Yeah, I don't believe the dust particles either because if you go to my website, I've got a picture that I snapped outside. I went outside and basically I planted these cypress trees and I was proud of them because they were growing. And it was snowing and windy and snowing, and I just wanted to get a picture of my cypress trees. Orbs all over the damn place in this picture. Now, there certainly wasn't any dust outside.
But moisture can do it too. With digital cameras, the problem with digital cameras, still cameras, did it have an automatic flash?
No.
Okay,
no,
then
no
that kind of that might debunk that, because if it's an automatic flash and there's any moisture, my sister-in-law and her husband went down to San Diego on a vacation, and they were walking around. They took this beautiful picture of the beach at sunset. It wasn't dark.
Right.
It was like the sun was at the horizon line. Really nice picture. And it had rained in the afternoon, but it had cleared out. And when she took the picture, there's a million orbs all over that beach. And I'm convinced that that's water particles reflecting back and confusing the sensor inside the digital camera.
I'm not sure of all pictures because my daughter's a professional photographer, and I get a lot of photos from people. People mail me photos, and they'll say, here's my ghost. The first thing I do with the photo is I send it to my daughter.
And she'll look at it and evaluate it.
She'll send me, she'll always, so far, every single time, she sends me back a family photo with the same illusion on it.
Right.
Within minutes. I mean, she'll say, no, you know. So she's pretty good at that. But I get a lot of them. And one woman even sent me a DVD. She swore her ceiling fan moves by itself, and it's got no electricity hooked up to it. And I said, call me, and we talked on the phone, and after I got her casually talking, I said, where was the remote for the ceiling fan? And she said, oh, it was on the counter. So it was like, yes, there was electricity hooked up to it, and yes, you had a remote going, and supposedly she had this ghostly ceiling fan.
Yeah,
I get a lot of that crap.
You can get confused. I think some orbs are legitimate. But a lot of them, like I get them all the time, people sending me stuff, you know, and I don't really like to make fun of them, but some of them it's obviously matrixing. One lady saw a face on a wall. It was an old cement wall. You know how they stain?
Sure.
It gets that black areas on cement. And if you look at it and you kind of squint your eyes, yeah, it looks kind of like a pirate skull.
Right.
But trust me, it's not. Like I told her, I says, I think it's, you know, just the way that the concrete is. It's nothing to worry about. It's like the people who see Elvis on burnt toast.
Yeah, they see Jesus everywhere.
Yeah,
you know.
He's every place.
Yeah,
he gets around.
I got one thing, though. Do visit my website, because on my website there's a picture. There's a couple of pictures. One, the YouTube video captures the ghost at about the 1 minute 30 mark. If you,
right.
You'll find it on YouTube or on truehaunting.com. But on edwinbecker.com, I've got some pictures, and one of them, a reader sent me. He went over the video, I guess, frame by frame.
Yeah.
And what he sent me was a partial frame. He said it was not even a full frame. It was me being interviewed, and there's something over my right shoulder.
Wow, that's creepy.
And when you, if you watch the video, you'll never catch it. You'll see it as a fleck or something. When he sent it to me, I've had other people look at it, and they made all kinds of negative comments about what it was, you know. But it's not in the film. It's not in the tape itself. Because the fellow who did it, who converted it for me, took out all the defects, the expert. And, yeah, you
can't. So it's not an artifact.
I'm sorry?
It's not an artifact that can, you know, occur in video. That's ruled out that way.
Oh, yeah. No, this was, I actually don't even know how it got made. Someone made it, because there were no video recorders in the day. And they handed me a Sony tape. It was a half-inch tape on a reel, much like a regular sound tape. I never looked at it, never cared to, until about 3 years ago. And then I found out there's no way I could look at it anyway, because nobody could play it. And I went to universities. I went all over the United States. And a little guy in Illinois, an old man, had the equipment. And he said he would clean it, I guess take any oxidation off of it.
This was film now, not video.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
And he used the video, and then when Paranormal Witness decided they wanted to put it at the end of the episode, that, you know, they're owned by NBC, so they had access to the archives. They went to Chicago. They had 16 hours of film that they shot at our house, actually. For the bit, all of it was lost in the archives.
Really?
So then they came back to me and they said, "Can we have that DVD you have for the end of our program?" And I had to FedEx it to them. And that what I have is all that exists.
Of the actual house.
Yeah, of the actual house and exorcism. And in its day, I mean, in a day when there was a half an hour worth of news, this took up 6.5 minutes of. Probably 24 minutes that they used to run the news on in those years without commercials, let's say. So they've devoted a quarter of the time to it, and the actual exorcism itself lasted 3.5 hours. It's pretty lengthy.
I just out of curiosity, I know this is kind of a stupid question. Were they able to identify, the exorcist, was he able to identify what the spirit was? What, I mean, you're saying it's a demon. You know, did he give it a name? A very negative entity? Was it more than one entity? Was there?
It was definitely more than one entity. It was four or five, actually. And one of them, the psychic, he was right on, because he said it was, one was an old woman. And he basically said, she's not threatening. Well, we already knew that. Marcia and I had seen her. So we knew there was an old woman, and we knew she was not threatening. Then he said there's one on the first floor that he felt was demonic. I mean, that was the reason the psychic brought in an exorcist, because he felt that it might... Well, then the exorcist was paranoid that exorcisms typically get violent.
Yeah.
So they tried to exorcise the house. Actually, a real exorcism, they tried to do the first floor the night before, the televised one. Totally unsuccessful. So they said I had something upstairs. I refer to it as Ben, because I antagonized him. He may have been the fellow that died there. I don't know.
He was not the threatening spirit.
No, he was mischievous, let's say.
Okay.
He would take the phone off the hook. He would unplug the stopper in our bathtub. He would
screw around with you.
Yeah, he stole my keys. You know, I had to go hunting. I had a hook by the door, and I'd hang my keys up. He took the keys one day and did different things, but nothing. I'm not sure who turned off the gas valves, because late in our stay, we had a situation where the gas valves got turned off, and they were up in the attic, and they were these hired old valves, lever valves that you on or off, and that frightened me.
Yeah, that would scare me, too. That might not have been him, though.
No, and they lie, you know. I mean, I always laugh when I hear some of these EVPs, because they'll say, you know, is this little Sally? And the EVP will say, yes, you know. Maybe it is, maybe it's not.
Well, we got one where it said it was Satan. This was in the basement of McGarrah's Inn, one of the last investigation we did.
Yeah, I laugh at those.
Yeah, me too. Because
anybody who knows anything about demonology knows that there's hundreds of thousands of demons, hundreds of thousands,
yeah.
Literally.
No, and number one, that was something that was whatever spirit was there was trying to scare them the hell out. And think about it. If there really is a Satan, what is he doing sitting in a basement of an old building in Monroe, New York? It's like he's homeless. I actually feel bad. I'd get a fund going for him because he's homeless. He's falling on hard times.
I wrote a book called Banished, and in there I use a real demon, and he's actually ranked 16th in the hierarchy of hell. Now, I don't know who wrote the hierarchy of hell, you know, but his name and history go back at least 600 years. And in studying demonology, to write the book, I had to find a demon whose personality matched what I wanted my character to do, to stay accurate. And people are shocked when they read it, because they look up the demon and they say, holy shit, he's real. And then, holy shit, that is his personality. He's arrogant and talkative and intellectual and, of course, evil. But in reading about demonology, it was like he's ranked 16th in hell and supposedly has 26 legions under him. You know, I assume it's an old Roman legion of 5,200.
Right.
26, you know, that's a shitload of demons, you know.
Yeah, that's...
And he's ranked 16th.
You need a big bus for those.
Yeah.
You ain't taking them on a drive in the family car. That's a lot of demons, dude.
Yeah. But I do believe that they're more prevalent than you know, everybody would like to think that there's this big bad demon that only possesses little girls and spits pea soup. I think that, you know, your drug obsessions, your gambling obsessions, your gluttony, you know, your seven deadly sins, the violence, the
sexual aggression.
Yeah, there's pornography everywhere, all of these things were being fed, all this evil, and you can't go to a gas station without gambling. They got lottery tickets everywhere. Here in Missouri, they got them down to a nickel if you want them.
No kidding.
Down to a nickel?
Yeah, they'll take your last nickel on a 5-cent lottery ticket. if you go to a casino in St. Louis, they got penny slot machines, banks of them. Huh. You know, because that's in a poor neighborhood, East St. Louis. So it's the bad thing when I wrote that book. It opened doors that I can't close. So I see things that sometimes
people ask. Well, I did a lot of reading on demons early on. I'm going to say maybe 20 years ago. And like I said, I was interested in everything, okay? Anything that was unusual attracted me as a kid. I mean, even when I was a teenager, I'd be reading these books. And, you know, after a while, it's almost like I became anesthetized to it. I mean, you read this stuff, then you go back further and you read the myth of creation in Gilgamesh?
Okay.
And that predates the Bible, and it's almost word for word, at least the Old Testament, anyway. And you know, like I said, these things become the thing that confuses me is I believe that the negative entities, what we call demons, existed before the name demons and before Christianity.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So there, to me, there's something that exists on almost another plane of existence that can somehow get in and out of our plane of existence. Like when you die, you move on. You go to another stage of life, to a different plane of existence. I don't believe you cease to exist.
The only thing I wondered, I mean, it's comedic because I always laugh when I think about it, but... when I read, you know, when I studied the hierarchy in hell and all that, I wondered who the hell wrote that. Barbara Walters certainly didn't put on there interview these people. You know, who are you? I'm the Duke. I'm the Earl.
They're given an actual ranking.
Yeah,
and
they have
cults. There's a lot of cult activity. I don't know if you. I don't know if you ever read The Ultimate Evil by Maury Terry.
No.
That's a fascinating book. He did some investigative journalism on that. I don't know how many years it took him to write it, but he went through the cops and, you know, there was all jurisdictional stuff when Son of Sam was happening. And he linked that in to cult activity that was really a cult that was a cover for drug smuggling and everything else. And that certain people were targeted, and it was more than one shooter involved in the Son of Sam. And he lays out a really good case, this guy. I mean, even the Queens district attorney wanted to keep the case open. It was the Manhattan district attorney that wanted it closed. They wanted to close the book on it.
Right.
But that's a, if you like a really interesting, really in-depth expose type of book, that's a good one.
I'll remember that.
Yeah, it's Maury Terry, The Ultimate Evil. It's really a good book. It's one of my favorites. But he really dug into that, and, you know, he kind of linked in that a lot of the cults really were about control. I mean, even the satanic cults, they lured these guys in with sex, drugs, and then they use them almost like the mob. As mules to carry drugs and everything else. This was in the 70s.
Yeah, no, I believe. I mean, look at Jim Jones.
Yeah.
You know, he got a whole bunch of people to drink poison Kool-Aid. That blows my mind.
Yeah.
And what about the other ones who all committed suicide because they thought they were going on the comet that was the UFO that was following the comet?
They were all wearing new Nikes or something, new gym shoes. I mean,
the
crazy
triangle.
Freaking crazy people, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to need these when you get on the spacecraft.
Look, you don't travel to space without Nikes. Everybody
right.
knows that.
Brain's gravitational powers.
That's right. It's got powers.
Yeah, guys,
that was a
I gotta go to bed. I gotta get up at 5 in the morning because I'm gonna get my cast off. I hope tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Thanks, Ed. I appreciate it. Sorry to keep you so long, brother.
It was really nice talking to you.
It was wonderful talking to you, and hopefully we'll talk again.
Yeah, I found it very interesting.
Blessings to you both. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Ed. See you, bro.
He's a good guy, Ed.
Yeah, yeah. I told you you'd like him. He's a nice guy. He's been through it. That's for sure.
Yeah, I got to read the book now. Now I'm dying to read the book.
Yeah, you can get it on Kindle, I think. I got I put a link up to him on Facebook.
I could probably get it on my iPad.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
All right, are we gonna pack it in now or what?
Yeah, I gotta get up at 5:30 myself, and Ed's got a little bit more time on us than we do, and I've been up since 4 o'clock this morning. So
You're tired. All right, dude.
All right. Well, you take it easy. Thanks for hanging out. We didn't get to any of the shows or the segments.
Nah, his stories were much more interesting.
Exactly. It was worth missing everything, and we'd do it again. We'll have
another time.
We'll do it again. All right, bro. Have a good evening.
Thanks a lot. I'll talk to you later, man.
Yeah, man. Talk to you tomorrow. Y'all have a good evening.
All right. You too.
All right. Bye-bye. And all the listeners, y'all, thank you all for tuning in. If you're still here, we'll see you later. Bye now.